live right now.
Live from Ted Jones Broadcasting Center in Trophy Club, Texas. It's the definitive quasi-independent podcast covering your world champion. Oops, not anymore. Your favorite team in the local NBA area, the Dallas Mavericks. And the NBA, it's the Mavericks Outsider Report. I'm Rylan Rowe. I do sports. With me, as always, is the man at the helm, the mild-mannered reporter, statesman and noted author. His mama calls him Ballin, and his mama calls him Brian because she's now hip with Twitter. So it's Ballin with Brian, Mr. Brian Gutierrez of Mavs.com and MavsFastBreak.com. Also with us today, back from a six-month vacation in Hawaii, is Irving Zone, the belligerent ball fan, professional man of leisure, and otherwise model American, Mr. Tim Koger.
Gentlemen.
The intro outran the bed music because I screwed up.
Damn. They're still champions.
You're once champions, forever champions.
They're the defending champions. They're just defending from home right now.
And when did you become a noted statesman? That's impressive, man. I'm impressed.
He made that up. I don't know.
Statesman and noted author.
My mom isn't hip to Twitter, though. She's not hip.
I just guessed. I didn't figure she was, but you never know.
Does your mom follow Brian Cardinal on Twitter?
No.
Oh, well, no. I was just curious about that.
Does she follow Ball and Brian on Twitter? No.
Oh. How are we doing?
I'm sick, but I'm okay.
Yeah?
Yeah. It probably would have been different if this show was on whatever day. Again, I'm terrible with days, so whatever day that game four was.
The womp womp edition of the Mavericks Outsider Report, episode 58. 59, sorry. What is today?
The 9th.
April, May. Yeah, it's May.
It's the 59th. May 9th. May 9th, 2012, year of the Mayan.
Wednesday? Sorry, you know what's got me messed up? Why don't you tell Brian what we did for lunch today?
We went to a little place we like to call Lockhart Barbecue. Are you familiar with
it? It wasn't La Madeline?
It was not La Madeline. Picture La Madeline and then picture the complete opposite of La Madeline.
Okay.
This is just down hard, just meat that is smoked low and slow, and it's juicy and moist and flavorful and falling off the bone and finger licking, beer drinking.
Okay.
Good quality.
Although we had sweet tea
food.
Since it was the middle of the workday. But you have sweet tea with barbecue if you can't have beer. We had what they call the Shiner platter, which is an assortment of smoked meats.
That just sounds funny.
That amounts to...
I picture some pretentious tray, and it really wasn't.
That amounts to probably, what, 6 pounds worth of meat?
Easily.
Give or take, maybe even a little more than that.
Easily.
Plus all their sides, plus crackers, plus, as you know how it goes with Texas barbecue, an entire loaf of white bread. Like, they just give you a loaf carried out to your table on a piece of butcher paper on a stolen Shiner city limit sign.
Wow.
And there were four of us, and we ate until we could eat no more, and that's why mentally I'm having trouble getting things from the brain space to the mouth space.
It was a true spread.
It
a true
tough.
Meat spread.
It was very tough to work on towards the end there. But
very strong. Get out the Lockharts.
Delicious.
Yeah, it was good. So anyway, May 9th, 2012, in the year of the Mayan, we're here to discuss basketball with you. Not really discuss because you can't talk back to us unless you want to call 214-317-4787 for the handful of you guys who are able to listen live. If you're listening on the podcast, that's what you're missing out on.
Missed out.
Sorry. Yeah, so our long national nightmare is over. That's all I really
Grandpa,
have to say.
Grandpa, the plug was pulled on
we
Grandpa.
Finally pulled the plug on old Grandpa.
See him one more time,
he had
kids.
A long, full life.
Cue the little trumpet that plays,
no,
you know,
taps?
At the funeral.
No
is
reason
that taps?
To
is that what that is?
Taps?
Is that taps?
That's military-esque. Yeah. I don't know if they're military, but yeah. It was time for them to go, unfortunately. You got to give credit to Oklahoma City. They're a damn good team.
Yep.
It was Kevin Durant in game three, who was very quiet in the first two games, but he he came out in a big way in game three. And you could see the look in his eye when I got to the arena probably an hour and a half before the media stuff gets going, because I was hungry, ready to eat, so I was ready. I walked out to the floor, and who's out on the floor? Kevin Durant. He's out on the floor with the coach, just getting up shots from various parts of the floor, and I think Derek Harper tweeted that he saw him on the floor getting shots up, and he just had a look in his eye that he was ready to play. And you could see that to start the game, because I believe he had like two threes to start the game. Mm-hmm. And the filthy part of it was, which shows how great Oklahoma City is that it came in the flow of their offense. Just ball movement, Kevin Durant, open three, boom.
And it seemed to me that the Mavs defensive scheme either failed them there or they failed to execute properly to leave him wide open. He got wide open twice early, established a rhythm, and that was all she wrote. That was one of the worst overall games I think I have seen in approximately 250 games at the AAC as a spectator. Wow. Since that arena was...
I'm trying to think of one.
Was launched on November 2nd, 2001, or whatever the date was.
But birthed.
But more birthed, since it was birthed on its birthday.
Were you there when they got eliminated in 06?
Yes, I was. But that wasn't a horrible performance. That was a close game.
And he turned his back probably.
I'm just trying to take myself back to the energy
that night. As soon as Jet missed the shot from the left corner there, I forcefully slammed the rail because I sat on the aisle and got out of there. I was so pissed. I wasn't going to watch those guys celebrate. It was a horrible, horrible effort. Not at all what I expected. I came into this thinking that they were going to get one, and if things bounce the right way, they might get lucky and tie the series up, but that seemed unlikely to me. I did expect them to get one, and the reason I expected them to do that was by virtue of coming into Game 3 and having their chest bowed up and saying, hey, we're still the champs. You got to come and take it from us. We're vets. We're salty. We're going to make this hard on you. We're going to come in, and we're going to execute. We're going to move the ball. We're going to play smart basketball. And none of those things happened. And honestly, I don't guess we should have expected them to, because they didn't happen all that often throughout the course of the season, which ultimately ended up being the demise of this team to begin with. So, yeah, there's that. It just kind of fell flat. And at that point, it's lights out, man. It doesn't matter what you do in game four. Stats do not support that
history,
you're
going
to do anything.
Going
so
against history there.
It was what it was. And Brian pointed out Kevin Durant. I mean, we might as well look at game four and say, look at what James Harden did. I mean, Westbrook was great the first two games. Harden got to the line a lot the first two games. And then in the final two games, they just pulled out another blade on the Swiss Army knife and said, we're going to get you with this guy. Now we're going to get you with this guy. It's a hallmark of a great team. They are a great team. They're going to be a hellacious matchup for whoever they get here in the next round. I suspect Lake Show, obviously.
You suspect?
I do not suspect Kenneth Faried and the Faridettes. So they're good. I give them all the credit. The things that we saw that was wrong with the way the Mavericks played throughout the year reared its ugly head in the worst way. It's kind of like, you know, last year during the run to the finals and even in the finals, you know, we knew where the Mavericks' weaknesses are or were because of having watched them throughout the season. But as the playoffs wore on, it was as if they closed around those weaknesses. You know, they improved their level of execution to the degree that they ultimately were the best team at the right time. And this year it was the exact opposite. Rather than, as the season went on, closing around those weaknesses and making those holes as small as possible, it's like everything just opened up and was exacerbated in the negative sense. And everything we bitched about all year, when things didn't go well, I felt like all reared its head, all four of these games in some fashion, and in a way that was worse because of when it happened, and it was so like severe. You know, it was such like a whiplash effect of just, you could be driving along the road and all of a sudden, bam, you've run into a brick wall, and it hits you more severely than you would even have expected. And that's in the way of soft inside play, nobody protecting the rim. That's in the way of simply not making shots, in the way of not moving the ball on offense, in the way of guys just not showing up. You had some guys that straight up showed up every game. I think Dirk and Kidd both did. But outside of that, I mean, there was a couple games Jet didn't show. Sean Marion didn't get off the bus for game three.
Delonte had his struggles.
Delonte had his struggles, unfortunately. Vince Carter definitely came to play there in the fourth game, but those first three games, I thought he struggled to do anything. I mean, everybody except Dirk and Kidd, I felt like, you know, had their glaring shortcomings in terms of meeting expectations. I mean, I guess I could go down the roster. Who else would there be? But
right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking who actually met, other than Dirk and Kidd, who met expectations consistently?
Maybe Jan, based on the fact that he's consistently inconsistent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a great everybody else. I mean, Delonte was inconsistent, Vince was inconsistent, Jet was inconsistent, everybody.
Yeah, it was a rough...
Everybody.
Rough go of it. My question would be for both of y'all, do y'all come away more impressed with Oklahoma City or just disappointed in the fact that the Mavs fell on their face?
Man, that's a good question.
Thank you.
I came away very impressed with OKC, but going into the matchup, you know, watching them throughout the season, I mean, they were essentially the number one seed throughout the season in the West up until, what, the last
week
two,
half,
three
maybe,
weeks,
yeah.
You know, or something like that. So I was already very impressed with OKC. You could see early on in the season, you know, one of the first few matchups with, with Dallas that they had taken another step, you know, as a team together, you know, from the Western Conference Finals last year. I was just very disappointed in the performance of the Mavericks. I mean, going back to what Ryland was saying, especially in Game 3, I mean, Games 1 and 2 were there for the taking for the Mavericks. I mean, the ball bounces here or there. We're, you know, 1-1 at the very least, you know. And I just expected a totally different performance from the seasoned vets here in Game 3, like Ryland was saying. Stick your chest out, play with a little pride, a little heart, you know what I mean? Defend the banner till the end, and they fell well short of my expectations, my standards. So, I mean, I definitely come away disappointed at the same time.
Go ahead.
No, man, you go ahead.
No.
No, you go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I would say... Awesome.
Who's on first?
You go ahead.
I expected a very
high... Hey, Ryland, go ahead.
Okay, can I go now?
Yes.
You want me to talk about it?
You're good.
About the basketball game?
Yes.
Okay. Mavericks?
Go.
I think that this is what I expected out of Oklahoma City, honestly. I didn't expect them to shrivel, you know, at the moment or anything else. Like you said, Tim, they were a top team all year. I fully expected them to be, you know, hell on wheels. I just also expected Dallas to step it up a little bit more. I mean, none of us expected sweep. Dirk has never been swept until last week. And so for that reason alone, I did not expect a sweep. I honestly expected six games with a couple of hard-fought wins and a couple of hard-fought losses and a couple of ass-whoopings. That's kind of what I expected. And what we got was really two hard-fought losses and really, honestly, two ass-whoopings.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, you can look at the closeness of that final game, sure, but look at what Oklahoma City did to the Mavericks in the fourth quarter.
Throttled them.
They strapped it on hard. So as far as I'm concerned, that's...
Right.
Rough.
That's awkward.
They did, dude. They bent him over.
I just got that.
Yeah.
So it all happened only because of what Tim said. Those two hard-fought wins were a couple bounces of the ball away from actually being wins. Then it all just fell. So it just the Mavericks just didn't execute. I thought they would just pull a tiny little bit out of their backside. And just execute just enough.
A little pride.
Just to make it happen. Well, I felt like they played the first two games with plenty of pride.
Yeah. But on the home court.
Most players, I mean, some didn't, but most did. But that third game.
Not the game when everyone expected them to.
That third game really lacked.
Backs against the wall, right.
It lacked everything. They came out, they got rattled by the officiating, which was very poor in the first 5-6 minutes of the game. They got rattled by it. They looked like the 2008 Mavs, 2007 Mavs, complete discombobulation mentally on the behalf of poor officiating and victim mentality. I tweeted that I had not seen nor felt that level of victim mentality in the AAC since Avery. And once that happened, I knew it was over. I knew it was done. I mean, at that point, you can't recover from that no matter how hard you try. And that set the tone. And nobody really did much of anything other than, you know, like I said, you know, Dirk and Kidd pulled their weight, and everybody else, nobody showed up that game, and everybody else had trouble showing up sporadically throughout the series. So Yeah, to answer your original question, I kind of got what I expected from OKC. I just didn't get quite what I expected from Dallas. It was a thin line. You know, it's a thin line between two wins and two losses in those first two games. But everything else, I got what I expected.
And I agree with both y'all that I think we got what we expected from OKC, but I'm still kind of surprised based off of how they got there, because Kendrick Perkins, whether he got away with stuff or not, he was still a pretty good impact on both ends of the floor, mainly on the defensive end of the floor. But then it made me think back, what's one of the first things we talked about with Kendrick Perkins earlier this year with the preseason games? Dude looks completely different.
Yeah.
Because he lost a lot of weight.
That's right. Yeah.
He lost 20 to 25 pounds, so he's pretty much a brand new player. And it looked like that over the course of the series, and now we have to see if he's actually going to be healthy going into the next series. But with Ibaka, you have two solid down low defenders that can be a force.
I'm bothered, though, that Perkins was able to defend Dirk
right, yeah.
so completely. And I'm going to chalk that up to, number one, Dirk having virtually no help on the court, which made things difficult for him in getting to a spot that he liked and getting the ball in a spot that he liked. And I'm also going to put it on Dirk's feet a little bit for generally being a tick off all season, you know? And for Dirk, being a tick off is still an all-star and 22 points a game and everything else. But when it comes down to nut-cutting time in the playoffs and you've got to try to get into that chess match with the defender who's going to guard you, and everybody on the court knows where you're trying to go and when they're going to try and get you the ball, you have to be, you know, a finely honed machine. And he just never got there this year because of preparation and fatigue. And so there it is. And I just hope that next year that Dirk is normal Dirk. Granted, he'll be a year older, and I understand that has an impact, but he better come into the season in shape, good condition, and the season won't wear everybody down, and hopefully he'll have better help around him. And I don't personally, Dirk ought to be taking Kendrick Perkins to the hole.
Right.
Yeah. Period. Even at 33, he needs to be taking Kendrick Perkins to the hole. I guess he's fitting to be 34. So, needs to be taking Kendrick Perkins to the hole. I'm sorry.
The other quick 2 points I wanted to make, and one of them we touched on last week, was Westbrook is just better than I thought he was. He knows how to get to his spots, and he can shoot. What the plan was to make him a shooter instead of a penetrator, but the problem is they left him too open for his shots. So they were clean looks at the basket. But then I give Scott Brooks a lot of credit, which is the last big surprise I had with Oklahoma
yes.
City. He did a great job keeping that team's composure over the course of the series, managing timeouts when they needed to be handled, and then understanding who the hot hand is, especially in that game four with Harden. More often than not, he's way in the background in the fourth quarter of a big game with Oklahoma
last
City.
Last year, they're feeding Durant that entire time. This year, they knew they rode the horse, and Harden delivered. That, and I don't think Brooks would have done that last year.
Agreed.
Anything else?
Sipping some Gatorade.
You want to save it for later.
That's
nice.
I'm not sure what kind of answer that was.
That's my save it for later. That's my save it for later. So we're going to go ahead and take a break. And on the other end of the break, we're going to have Mark Falwell, TV play-by-play voice of the still world champion Dallas Mavericks, on the other end of the line. And, oh, good call. Good call.
We're rolling with this whole show.
MCA.
This is a tribute to MCA?
Yeah.
2 hour tribute here on Mavs Outsider Report?
Probably not a full 2 hours, but maybe the common, I don't know, maybe like 3 minutes when you all chop it up.
Yeah, 3.5, 4 minutes.
Guess that's
worth
a good
music.
Point.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind a full 2 hours.
We're just going to run Beastie Boys bed music the whole time.
That's up after the break. Mavericks Outsider Report.
What else is up after the break? TV voice of the Mavericks.
I said that.
Oh, you did? Sorry, I was getting
you. You were getting your MCA on.
My bad.
The great Mark Falwell joins us next on NOR.
You know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
That comes in kind of strong, doesn't it?
It does.
I think Brian almost had a, I don't know, eardrum leak or something go on right there.
There's leaking.
Yeah. Welcome back. Mavericks Outsider Report, episode 59. We're here. So are you. That's always nice. And we're talking Mavs post-mortem. We're talking about our long national nightmare is finally over. And here to help us, if you hear him having a laugh, it's one of our favorite guys, TV voice of the Mavericks, Mr. Mark Folliwell. How you doing, man?
I'm good. So how does it sound if I talk to you on the speakerphone while I'm driving? Does it sound acceptable, or what do you think?
You're fine.
Yeah, it sounds okay.
You're fine. Just don't get in an accident, because that
I won't. By the way, I certainly appreciate the usage of Gerald Ford's Our Long National Nightmare Is Over. I think I tweeted that last year after the Mavericks won, when in reference to the prospect of the Heat winning.
Yeah.
Because our long national nightmare was over.
That one qualifies far more as a national nightmare. This is more a local nightmare.
Yeah.
But it's over nonetheless, and so we're here to talk about it. And obviously, Mark, I'm sure you have some thoughts. We've just been batting around what we saw in those final two games here in our first segment. I guess now that we've got you on, the thing we kind of want to look at is just more from a big picture standpoint. How do you feel about what just happened in terms of Dirk getting swept out for the first time ever in his career? And did you see – I think we all saw an early exit being likely, but did you foresee a scenario where a sweep would actually happen?
I didn't foresee that scenario, but, you know, when it comes to the Mavs, I mean, I'm never going to foresee the worst-case scenario. I'm not always going to foresee the best-case scenario, but I'm damn sure never going to foresee the worst-case scenario. So I didn't, you know, I obviously didn't see that coming. You know, and especially because history at least was on Dirk and Dallas's side. The Oklahoma City series was the 26th seven-game playoff series in the history of the Maverick organization. And I believe that only four of them occurred before Dirk got there. So we're talking about, you know, that was the 22nd seven-game series under the in the Dirk era of Maverick basketball, and it was not until the 22nd one that they got swept. The first 21, that never happened. So, you know, you obviously have to think going into it that odds are that they're not going to, but it happened, and it's disappointing. How much more disappointing is it that they got swept instead of losing in five games? I don't know when you're looking at that it matters a whole lot, but certainly there is, you know, there is a bit of a dubious distinction whenever you get listed amongst the teams that got swept, particularly amongst defending champions that got swept in the first round, and Miami was an example of that in 2007. But it is what it is, which, as we all know, is, you know, I know that's a very, very simple cliche, but it's just a fancy way of saying the situation sucks, but there's nothing I can do about it, so I'm going to deal with it the best as I can. And so that's, I think, probably what we're going to have to do here as we dissect and cuss and discuss what went wrong with this thing.
I know you had some theories of why it possibly went wrong, and I know you formulate and do all kinds of statistical analysis of everything that goes on. So what are your theories of what possibly went wrong?
Well, my first theory is, man, you've got to get hold of some hot tea and honey or something like that. Good Lord.
Thank you.
It's pretty rough. It is pretty rough. And
yeah.
I would assume, Mark, you have, given your profession, you probably have every remedy in the book to offer to Brian. So maybe later on tonight, some text messages.
Gargle with warm salt water, hot tea and honey, and all that sort of good stuff. You know, Vicks. Are you using Vicks, son?
Yes, I am.
Son. Yeah, that works. I'm telling you, that
I know.
Stuff works.
I know.
Man.
I know.
It does, man. Yeah, just
a little castor oil.
Wouldn't go that far.
Yeah, no, you know, you don't have to go with the castor oil, but apricot brandy is a great cough medicine. A little, hot toddy, something like that, man. I'm dying listening to you here, so I'm sorry to hear that. Here,
it's okay.
Not sounding well.
It's okay.
I'm not feeling.
I appreciate
it. So thoughts on what went wrong with it this year? Well, I think that there, you know, I hate to look at basketball and such cosmic forces of the bounce here, and I know Jeff Van Gundy calls it a make or miss league, and there is a lot to that, but I don't want to reduce it just to the cosmic forces of you can't control what the ball is going to do. And I do think there's a little bit more in play than that. But I think that when you look at the what-if game of the 2011 Mavericks, it came up on the positive in practically every conceivable scenario, especially during the playoff run. And I think any team can look at, you know, their season, and most teams never bottom out to the floor, and most teams never achieve their ceiling. And the Mavs didn't achieve their ceiling for a number of reasons, and I would think that, you know, you're looking at 10 games that they were led, and counting the two games at Oklahoma City in the playoffs, you're talking about 10 games where they led or were at least tied in the final minute of the fourth quarter or the final minute of overtime, and they couldn't close the deal. I mean, you were 10 games lost where you led or were tied in the final minute, and that's just, you know, that's crazy. That you had so many games that were so close that slipped through your fingers. I think that they were hampered somewhat by the fact that there was never a sustained stretch of time where they put a healthy lineup on the floor to try to get something resembling chemistry on the floor anyway. I think that hurt them. I think that the colossal failure of Lamar Odom and the colossal step back that he took in his game obviously is a big, big difference in what went down. So when you look at Odom just spectacularly falling short of what we thought he was capable of in the close games, then it certainly stands to reason that you could easily find four or five more wins had you been just around the norm in games like that. And four or five more wins puts you in the 4-5, you know, possibly having home court advantage in the first round, and maybe we're having a different discussion. But the bottom line is that's not what happened. So those to me are among the many things that went wrong. Maybe there was some championship hangover that kept it from being as good as it could have been coming out of the gate. And unfortunately for the Mavs, I mean, it was a unique championship for a lot of reasons, and the defense of it was very unique. And part of the uniqueness of it, unfortunately, was that you're coming off a lockout, and you had so many free agents, and I know that a lot of people are saying, well, how in the world can you break up a championship team? This was, like I said, it was a unique championship team, and it ended up not returning intact because you had, I think, four of your top nine playoff minute performers being free agents, and obviously Tyson and Barea and Stevenson and Peja. And then you tack on to that, it's just the you know, whatever the NBA is going to hold for us going forward in terms of restrictions with the CBA and the luxury tax applications and the things that you're going to have taken away from you if you wander off too far into tax territory. Let's just say there was a dynamic that the Mavericks faced that no other defending champion has faced because of the nature of the lockout. I guess the 99 Bulls did, but they went into it knowing that they were going to strip the thing down completely bare because Jordan and Jackson and Pippen were all going to be gone at that point. So it was a combination of many things, and those are the things to me that stand out the most.
You brought up one of the names that I'm sure we're going to talk about a whole lot more in a little bit. It's Tyson Chandler. And his name has come up a whole lot after the Mavericks got bounced.
Just a little bit. You've been listening to the radio any?
A little bit. His name has come up a lot, and a lot of people are saying that this series would have been dramatically different, or this season would have been dramatically different if Tyson Chandler was on board. And I think that might be giving him too much credit, but it's also not giving enough credit to everyone else that was not a part of the roster this year from last year. So what's your stance to what the spin has been now to where it's this thing was missing Tyson Chandler?
Well, the first thing I want to say to that, and I want to make this point very, very clear, is that, I read things online, I've heard things, and as it relates to Chandler and to Barea and everybody who was a part of the thing, but particularly Chandler, you know, I don't want to wander off into the territory of saying anything negative about him or anything negative about what his team is doing because, man, I love the guy. And I'm not happy, and I don't think that it stands for any sort of validation for the Mavs that his team is, you know, going to lose in five games or whatever it is that they're going to lose in the first round of the playoffs to Miami. As Rick Carlisle said when he got his ring and many of those other guys that aren't here came back and got their rings, to me, they are Mavericks for life. And they brought all of us something really, really, really special that can't be replaced, that will be, you know, just the memory of a lifetime for a lot of us as it relates to our rooting interest in a little Mavericks. So, So the first thing I want to say is, man, I don't want to get, you know, off into this territory of saying something negative about Chandler. You know, like I said, I'm not happy that the guy is about to get swept. I want to see good things happen for him. I love J.J. Barea. You know, I'm not happy his team missed the playoffs. I want to get see good things happen for him. I mean, I think the world of those guys, and like I said, they're very, very special, and they are Mavericks for life. So I want good things for them going forward. So that's the first thing that I felt like it was necessary to say in light of, you know, some of the things that are out there here after the end of the season. The second thing I would say as it relates to Chandler, clearly his impact on it was huge. And so the question then becomes, well, what options did you have going forward if you want to roll the clock back to December? And to me, there were three things you could have done. You could have done what they did, and that certainly opens up some intriguing and exciting possibilities with flexibility and the future and retooling the team and getting significantly younger in a lot of positions and hopefully building the bridge to the next era of Mavs basketball. So I think that aspect of it is certainly exciting, and I'm looking forward to what they're going to be able to do this summer with the flexibility and having cap room, something we've never seen happen in the Cuban Donnie Nelson era of, you know, running the Mavericks. The other two choices are, well, the obvious choice, you could have brought the entire band back together, bring back every piece conceivable from the championship team. Chandler, Barea, maybe a little bit of Stevenson in there, although you'd already traded for Rudy Fernandez on draft night before the lockout hit, so maybe you wouldn't have brought him back. But maybe you could have still brought him back for a short role, a brief, you know, a cameo in some games and special situations. Corey Brewer, don't trade him. Cardinal comes back. Yeah, you know, Pace obviously retired, and Caron didn't play during the championship run, so those guys probably, you know, aren't coming back. But I think that you load up and you bring everyone back, and I think that a lot of people would obviously have liked that, and you go into it and say, we're going to try to repeat, and we're going to be willing to bite the bullet. You know, and that's me, and that's fans, and that's ownership, and the team, and all that. For the possibility of repeating, however difficult or however much of a long shot it might have been, let's try it. Let's see if we can make it happen. And you know, the consequence to that is the possibility of being a 30-win team or something like that. And in 3 or 4 years, once Dirk, you know, is gone, or at least, you know, at the very, very late stages of his career where he's not the player that he is. And then the other thing that you could have done is, you bring back just Chandler. And to me, I think that that's a very, very risky proposition to look at it that way, because Chandler would obviously have made the thing better this year. There's no question that they would have been a better team with Chandler on it this year. However, as a lot of people have discussed, if you bring Chandler back and you try to shoot for flexibility in 2013 as well, if you try to do both of those things, if Chandler's number is anywhere near what it was in New York to start out his contract, and I think it would have been. I mean, he certainly indicated he didn't want to take a hometown discount. You know, he wasn't a jerk about it, but he just, you know, had floated that out there that Dirk had more money than he did, so he couldn't take the pay cut or less than what his market value was like Dirk did.
Right.
So you bring Chandler back, and then unless you have some seriously one-sided salary dump trades, then the room to sign a max free agent this upcoming offseason would not have been there. So what you would have been looking at is, well, we're going to try to retain flexibility, so we're going to have a lot of guys on the end of their contracts on one-year deals, which is what we had this year. And it would be a better, more palatable version of it because you had Chandler here, but I still don't think that would have been good enough. I mean, you might have been a second round. You might have gotten into the second round at that point, or maybe farther. I don't know. You would have been better. How much better? It's tough to say. But as we saw this year, when you've got people on one-year deals or at the end of their contracts, you know, the beauty of the previous season, even when you had a bunch of free agents, as Jason Kidd said in the Sterminators book, we had a bunch of free agents, but nobody acted like it. And obviously this year there was a little bit of a different vibe as it related to free agency in the future. And so I think, you know, a Chandler back and just him, yeah, you would have had a better version of what you had this year, but I still think that you would have fell short. So those are the three options that you kind of had laying out there before you. And obviously we're all debating on which one would have been the right one. But the reality of it is the choice has been made. We'll never know what would have happened had they gone one of the other two directions. And so based on the choice that was made, I miss Tyson. I do think he could have made them better. But I'm also equally excited about the flexibility. And like I said, the retool and getting younger and this thing looking drastically different going forward. And like I said, maybe bridging the era to the next era of Mavericks basketball and doing so without much of a dip in terms of what the team's performance is on the floor.
I think one of the things you said earlier about the Mavericks losing close games being a big, you know, a big thing this year that differentiated them from last season. When I work back from that, I think about late game execution. And when I think about execution, one of the things that was missing this year that I still don't know exactly why, and I'd like to know if you have an opinion on this, Mark, is where did the ball movement go? On a team with this many veterans and Jason Kidd and Vince Carter, who's well known to be a good passer, and obviously guys like Dirk and Jet, who are very good offensive players, you know, from an offensive standpoint, the team on paper got better, but the ball movement just never was there. And I think that that was kind of just a harbinger of the way they executed down the stretch in games. They had hard times getting good shots. Do you have any thoughts on why?
Sure. The bottom line is that offensively, whatever changes in personnel were made, it didn't manifest itself. I mean, they were not a good offensive team this year. And in scoring and shooting categories, they basically ranked in the bottom of the middle third or the top of the bottom third in the league. They were bouncing anywhere between 19th and 22nd, although I guess their free throw shooting did get up into the high, you know, between like 10 and 12 or something like that. But three-point shooting, field goal percentage, scoring, offensive efficiency, all those things were down around 19, 20, 21, 22. So they were not a better – I mean, they weren't even close to being the offensive shot-making team that they were last year. And as to your theory about ball movement, well, number one, Kidd wasn't on the floor anywhere remotely close to the same percentage of time that he was last year because his minutes were down per game, and he missed so many more games. So there's part of your answer right there. Morea was a big part of the ball movement, and he was gone. You mentioned Carter's name, but Vince wasn't a guy who had a big role in games. I mean, he played 23, 24 minutes a game, something along those lines. And he wasn't on the floor to close out a lot of games. I mean, he was some, but he wasn't a guy that was closing out just a ton of games until late in the year. So ball movement was not, you know, it just the same personnel weren't there to make that happen that were there to make it happen in a lot of those late-game situations the year before. I don't think there's anything, you know, more to it than that, honestly.
You mentioned JJ. When everybody was kind of freaking out about getting swept and what that meant relative to not having Tyson, I floated the thought on Twitter, and I still stand behind it, which was that at least in the series against Oklahoma City, despite the endless parade of James Harden and Russell Westbrook and others to the rim, Serge Ibaka in game one, I think that in that series against Oklahoma City, I think having J.J. Barea, because you had nobody penetrating and very few people capable of scoring in bunches, I think J.J. Barea would have had a bigger impact on that series, actually, than Tyson Chandler. I think they missed his scoring so bad. And if you look at the offensive and defensive ratings in the two series last year and this year, defensively last year, the Mavericks allowed, I think, 107.8 points per 100 possessions to the Thunder, and this year it was 108. So basically the same. I may be getting the years mixed up there. I forget. But their offense, I believe, it was either 108 or 110 points per possession. I can't remember. Probably 110 last year, and only 100 points per 100 possessions this year. So their offensive execution, obviously, like we just said, wasn't on par. So I take that with my eyeball test telling me nobody on this team can get to the rim. And despite all the wailing and gnashing of teeth about Tyson Chandler, which I understand, I think little JJ would have had a much larger visible impact on that series.
I don't know that I completely buy into that just because Chandler was, you know, such a presence inside and such an emotional presence. But I do think that there is some, you know, they obviously miss Varea. I don't think that there's any doubt about that. And I think that, to me, though, when I look at, and again, I hate to oversimplify things and go Chip Van Gundy is a make-or-miss league on you, but let's just face it. Shot-making was not all year long, and then in this series, everything has been on a downward turn for the Mavericks when it comes to shot-making. And that includes the most important shot-maker, and that's Dirk. You know, Dirk had, you know, first couple of games of the series were good, but then, you know, no one had a great third game of the series. And then in the fourth game, Dirk had a really nice stretch where he started slowly and then rattled off something like 8 out of 10 shots. And then I think Dirk missed 9 out of his last 10 shots as things were changing in the fourth quarter. So Borea would help that somewhat, of course, because you would create open looks for people because of the dribble penetration that he did. So I certainly think it stands to reason that he would have had an impact. How much would he had to compare to, you know, compared to Tyson, I don't know. But I think definitely Borea would have had impact. I thought that he was missed, and I thought that I know a lot of people liked what Delonte brought to the table this year, and he did some good things, but I don't think that, you know, I saw people saying early in the year that Delonte is bringing, you know, the best of Borea and Stevenson, and it's almost like they've replaced two guys with one. I just don't feel like that was the case. I mean, you know, he did some nice things, and I hope the opportunity is there for him to be back next year. But I don't feel like that Delonte was able to effectively give you the best of Stevenson and the best of Borea. And both of those two guys were obviously important. I don't feel like that he necessarily was able to give you that. Because as much maligned as Borea was around here, I mean, his 3-point shooting got in gear after a slow start last year. He was big in the playoffs. He had, you know, some big scoring games, and a lot of those were timely baskets and fourth quarter situations when he was out on the floor running the team while Kidd was getting rest in the late third, early part of the fourth quarter. So Borea had a big impact on it. And again, how much compared to Tyson was he missed? I don't know. He was missed. I don't know if there's any doubt about that.
The wording you used was very interesting, which was building the bridge to the next era of Mavs basketball. And that's what makes this summer or the leading summers so exciting. And I'm sure you've started to take a look at it, maybe not as much as you've wanted to yet, but when you look to this summer, obviously Deron Williams is the big fish. But if that doesn't work out, what other things would you like to see happen?
You took my question.
Sorry, bro.
Ooh, well, they obviously want the big fish out there. I mean, I don't think there's, you know, they certainly alluded to that. You know, without getting into specific names, because there's going to be enough speculation about that between now and then, I think that we all realize, you know, what the Mavs need. And this thing needs somebody at the guard position that is elite in nature in terms of his ability to score and create his own shot. They certainly need to upgrade at the five, and they need someone who is more of a presence in there than what they had this year. I think that, you know, depending, and it all, of course, a lot of it depends on who from the core of the team goes, who's brought back, but I think that, you know, the wings are going to need some sort of, if your elite scoring shot creator at the guard position happens to be at the point guard position, then, you know, I still think you have some overhauling to do at the wings, because what you have under contract right now, there isn't a whole lot at the wing positions. You got Azubuike, who knows what's going to be there, and Roddy is on the team right now, but we don't know if he's going to be on the team when 2012 starts. Is he going to be moved to get something else, or moved to clear more cap room, or moved because somebody makes an offer that the Mavericks can't refuse? I mean, this is a guy that supposedly people were offering lottery picks for 2 years ago, so if someone calls and makes you that offer, can you turn him down? I don't think anybody will call and make that offer, but if they did, could you say no to it? If somebody were in love with him out there that we don't realize who it is, then you'd have to take a long, hard look at it. So I don't know who's going to be on the team next year, but I do know that based on what we saw at the end of the year, it's obvious that Dirk needs scoring help, and, you know, they do need some sort of complement next to him in terms of a defensive-minded big guy that he doesn't have to be, you know, the emphatic catch-a-lob-pass and finish guy like Chandler was, but he needs to be someone who at least can walk and chew bubblegum at the same time, and preferably be better than a 47% free throw shooter. so you can have him on the floor at important times of the game and not be afraid of what happens if this guy gets a rebound or what happens if I'm in the bonus. Is he going to be, are they going to start intentionally fouling this guy? You know, and I don't think Nahimi's ready to be that player yet. He's a nice backup center, and if he could be their backup five, I think that would be great because you're not going to have to renounce him, presumably, to clear much in the way of cap room. His cap hold won't be very big, so you might be able to retain some early bird rights for him. And, you know, Wright, presumably, Brandon Wright, that is part of the picture. But I think even as we saw in the Oklahoma City series, he's still limited in what he can bring you. But he is a usable piece. We didn't see that in the playoffs. And obviously, I guess that's the most important thing is the guy you have here, can he help you out in the playoffs? But maybe next year he'll be a little bit more equipped. I thought Derek Harper made a great point about Brandon. And that is, and I'm not saying that this is where his head was, but Harp said when talking about him, we talked about it at practice one day, and then we had the same discussion on the air, is that when it comes to the playoffs, when the playoffs get here, you can't be getting ready for playoff basketball. You have to be ready for playoff basketball. And maybe Brandon was thinking he needed to be getting ready for it, and the reality was he needed to be ready for it. And maybe that's something that he learned, and maybe he'll be better equipped to perform better on that stage if the opportunity presents itself next year.
Hey, Mark, this is Tim. Hey, along the lines of
Hey, Tim, how are you? How's working out going?
Same old, man. Just trying to get swole, you know.
Staying swole.
Yeah,
that's what I'm trying to do.
You're already there. You're already there, dog.
So. But along the lines of the uncertainty with the core, I found myself in game four, even though I was, knew the result and, I was very, very bitter and frustrated. I wanted to change the channel. I found myself sticking around because it could very easily be one of the last times that we ever see J-Kid, Jet, and Dirk, all playing together. And I was wondering if you could put on your Mavs-colored glasses, as we like to do, and from a fan standpoint, and talk a little bit about how you're going to remember Jet and J-Kid playing with Dirk and in the Dirk era, if in fact that they don't come back next year, and what they've meant to this organization is, and obviously we all know the run last year, but just kind of curious your take.
My take is that I think that Jason Terry will be missed if he's not on the team next year. Now, circumstances may mean that it's time for everybody to move on. I hope that doesn't turn out to be the case, but if you look at the numbers, and the Mavericks are going to add a bunch of people to cap room, then obviously they're going to have to renounce Jason Terry's bird rights. And then they're not going to have anything more than maybe the room team $2.5 million exception to use on him. So it certainly stands to reason that there's going to be more of a market for Terry out there than that. So it may be hard to bring him back unless you just strike out on everybody that you go after that's on another team in free agency. And then you would have to reevaluate. But I love Chet because he's a gamer, because he's not afraid of the moment, because he was willing to step up and take a lot of clutch big-time important shots for this team over the last 8 years, and he wasn't afraid to fail, and some nights he failed, but a lot of nights he made them, and they were a big reason why we saw a lot of wing basketball here, the shots that Jason Terry made over the last 8 years. So he's an all-time great Mav to me. I love the way he interacted with the crowd and the fact that there was a brashness to him in his talking. I think when you look at that Terry obviously had in his game as being an undersized shooting guard. He's clearly the guy that we like to refer to as the shooting guard and the point guard's body. I think Jason Terry's had a hell of a career for himself. To be fourth in league history in made threes and to have well over 16,000 points, and he's well into the top 100 in the history of the entire league in scoring. Never made it to an all-star team, but as a sixth man of the year, was a big player on good teams for a long time and was somebody who won a championship and provided and performed very, very big in the biggest games on the way to that championship. So I think Terry's had a heck of a career, and unfortunately it may be over in Dallas. Maybe it won't be. I hope not, but I do think that they'll miss that not being afraid of the moment, recognize the moment mentality. And they're certainly going to miss, because I think it was even apparent late in the season that when Kidd was available to play and they loosened up the minute restrictions on him a little bit, and he played a little bit more in the second half of games, that he had and can still put his stamp all over a game, even though he's not going to score a whole lot. but at 39 years old, he's still capable of the instincts allowing him to put his stamp on a game. So he's a guy that we'd be missed too, and I guess there's a lot of talk that maybe he can come back in some sort of backup capacity if you have a major upgrade at the point guard position. So we'll see if that's a possibility. But again, I think that we all have to, maybe less so with Kidd than with Terry, but at least prepare ourselves to the possibility that he's not a part of the thing. And clearly, two different sets of the Mavs and a championship and a lot of his career achievements occurred in a Maverick uniform in terms of going up those final steps on the ladder en route to being second all-time in assists and second all-time in steals and third all-time in threes. So, you know, it's I look back at a great, great Maverick run for Jason Kidd, too.
One guy, it's funny, we've talked about folks that, you know, may or may not be here next year, and obviously we're all expecting, you know, an overhaul of some size on the roster. And you mentioned, Mark, that, you know, Delonte, like what he brought, wouldn't object if he came back under the right circumstances. Obviously, we just talked about Terry and Kidd. Someone we haven't talked about who, until recently, I didn't realize that due to the way the contract may be structured, may be more likely to come back than I think we forecasted.
Ye?
Actually, Vince Carter.
Oh, okay.
Although, I don't even know. I assume Ye has nothing, but... Vince, have you heard, or have either you guys heard Tim O'Brien, a definite figure on what the guaranteed portion of his deal is next year? Because some of the murmurings that I've heard, Twitter and elsewhere, indicate that he may be owed enough next year as far as what portion of his $3 million or so are guaranteed, that it makes more sense to hang on to him than to let him go and pay that guaranteed portion and have that count against the cap just because of what you can get for that amount of money on the market.
What I read online, and there are a lot of different, you know, clearinghouses for contract information, but shamsports.com is a good one. And what I read there was that he's guaranteed $2 million next year and $2 million the following year. And the contracts are for $3 million+ each year. And everything becomes fully guaranteed if he's not waived by June 30th. So I would think that maybe they would keep him, but he's a candidate, I suppose, for them to not keep him around and then keep in mind that since he was signed under the new CBA, he'd be available for the stretch provision.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
The 5 years.
So,
that's why we call in experts into this show.
There you go. So and from my understanding, this is all uncharted waters for us because of the new agreement, but I guess the stretch provision is whatever money the player is owed can be spread apart over double the years remaining on the contract plus one.
Right.
I think that's what it is.
So five.
That's not right.
Fiver.
Yeah, so 5 years there.
Yeah.
Then. So do they only get to use that on a single player at a given time, or is that to anyone who they take an early termination on? Do we know?
I think that's anyone. I don't think that's a one-time deal.
If that's the case, then that's only $400,000.
Or 800, I believe.
Yeah, I think it would be 800. Yeah.
2 million divided by, I guess, 2 million for both years.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So the, I think that it's only people that have been signed since the inception of the new collective bargaining agreement. But I don't think that there's a limit on how many people are. You know, anybody you sign, you can stretch provision if you choose to do so.
They wouldn't be prohibited to doing it for someone else within that 5-year
later
period,
on down
basically.
The line.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I agree with
that,
Mark.
That I'm not 100% certain on that, but I feel about 97% certain on
that. I'll take that last three,
yeah.
Mark.
Well, boy, that puts things on the fence pretty solidly because I think this whole offseason, obviously we all have our eyes on, you know, a big free agent signing in the way of Deron Williams, and assuming something like that occurs, obviously, he fills a need, and everybody wants him here, and so on and so forth. The real question about what you do next year hinges on how you spend the rest of that cap space currency that you have, and a couple million here or there could be the difference between a decent player and an impact player. So, who's to say that could easily go either way?
And you know, who's to say what they're going to do with? I mean, obviously they've got to create that cap room. So one has to assume that someone's going to be amnestied can you trade a contract and just, you know, salary dump? Can you do a one-sided salary dump where you don't take back much or nothing? Much like what Odom, you know, the way the Lakers did with Odom to the Mavericks. I don't know, but yeah, they're gonna have to be creative with this thing going forward. But that's always one of the words that are attached to Mark and Donnie when people talk about what they're gonna try to do on the marketplace. Is they're gonna be opportunistic and creative. So that's definitely what they're gonna have to do this offseason.
It's gonna lead to a lot of excitement.
No history to base it on. Not only do we have a new CBA, but we have a front office that's never had cap room to work with. You know, in previous years, we kind of had some idea of how they like to operate and move assets around. Now we have a new rule book, and, you know, we all just nothing but guesswork. So there's going to be a lot of speculation, a lot of blog entries by guys like Brian Gutierrez.
Maybe.
There you go.
Required reading.
I hope they end up keeping the 17th pick, because this is supposed to be a pretty deep draft. So it would be nice, you know, to add someone. I think one of the great misconceptions people have is that Miami built their team with the big three, and then they just filled in with veteran minimums around that, and that's not the case. Miami, you know, was lucky enough in that all three guys came in together. It wasn't like one guy 1 year. You know, for example, New York did, one guy comes in free agency in Amari, then they trade for Carmelo, then they add Tyson. So they didn't necessarily have the whole three guys happening at once working together. And say what you will about the big three in Miami. Hey, credit to them for doing what they did, because they did end up taking a little bit less money. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was last summer, they didn't, you know, they have relied very little on veteran minimum players, at least in terms of meaningful rotation minutes. And in big games. Bibby did last year, but we saw that by the end of the finals that he had gotten benched.
Right.
And they went with Eddie House, who was another veteran minimum player. But they left cap room available last year to have room to sign Mike Miller, to be able to renounce Udonis Haslam to get the cap room in the first place, but then still have enough left over to re-sign him to a reasonable deal. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to renounce Joel Anthony, so they had some bird rights on him so they could give him a decent little contract of I think, 5 years and $18 million. They had a little bit of cap space to give James Jones a slightly more than minimum contract. They had Mario Chalmers under contract already, so they had a good young player on the cheap, who then they had to re-up this past offseason. I think he's at $4 million per.
Yep.
So to make these things work, I mean, you got to have some young players that are on their, you know, first round rookie deal or second round rookie deal, and you know, they had that in Chalmers last year, and even though he's not a huge part of the rotation in the playoffs, but Norris Cole is somebody else in the picture as well, and then they had that mini mid level to add Shane Battier this year. So by now, other than Norris Cole being a guy that's on his rookie deal. And I guess Roni Turioff plays a little bit. I mean, they're not really relying on veteran minimum players to play meaningful minutes for them in Miami. So that's, you know, that's one thing that, you know, you need to have some good young players on your team that are cheap, because I think people just have this misconception that, oh, if you get two or three guys, then it's all just a bunch of veteran minimums that you piece around them and it works. No, that's not what Miami did. I mean, they had veteran minimums on their team last year, but that was... That was into their roster guys who weren't counted on for meaningful minutes, and even in the end, what they had was not enough depth wise. I mean, I think we would all say that, you know, big reason why the Mavericks won that series is because from four on down on the roster, the Mavs had some really good options in terms of depth that was able to outperform Miami's deeper guys on the roster.
I'm proud of you for talking about Miami that long, and.
And I'm sitting here looking at the salaries, and his numbers are dead on every single time.
He knows everything.
Basketball Rain.
Well, I don't know everything, but hey, man, I find it a lot easier. I find it a lot more palatable to talk about Miami this year because they behaved and they haven't pranced around trying to, you know, doing all that bullshit that they were doing last year. And,
plus scoreboard anyway last year. So
and yes, exactly. There you go.
All the demons were exercised.
Scoreboard.
Yeah.
Got a championship before they did.
But
there you go.
You bring up a really good point, which is going to be a reality in the NBA under this new deal, which really hasn't been that big of a deal for top teams in the past, and that's going to be the idea of guys outplaying their deals. That's a big thing. We're all big baseball fans now, and we see how a team can actually put
together.
Yeah, we're working on Brian.
I'm getting there.
We see how teams firsthand actually put together, you know, a winning organization. And of course, it's way different for a myriad of reasons. But one of the big concepts is you got a lot of guys whose value considerably outweighs what you're paying them. And you're going to have to find a way to do that in a much more limited fashion in the NBA world now if you're going to have a couple superstars and still put together a deep team that can make a deep run.
Sure. I think that, I mean, supposedly that was one of Mark's real, and obviously it worked out great the way it happened, but one of his strongest arguments he said against trading for Al Jefferson when he was supposedly available for the Dampier expiring contract was that Utah also wanted, depending on what you read and what you believe, at least one first-round pick, if not two first-round picks. And Cuban said after the fact that I didn't want to do it because I didn't want to give up the first-round picks because I think that they're going to be even more valuable going forward. And he was speaking then like someone who thought a hard cap was going to occur, and they don't have a hard cap, but they do have, you know, tremendous restrictions on what happens if you wander off too far into tax territory, which is, as we know, it's going to be more punitive starting with the 2013-14 season. The rates are more punitive. The repeater tax is something that's out there, but it's not just finances too. It's, you have less tools at your disposal. You don't have a full mid-level, you have a mini mid-level, and you're limited in what you can do in signing trades, and you don't get the biannual exception. So you still have some mechanisms to improve your team, but you don't have all of the mechanisms that non-taxpayers will have. So there is, it's not a hard cap, but it certainly is something that, that I think you have to pay a little bit more attention to now, because it's one thing to exceed the tax by $5 million when the penalty is $5 million. But if you get into repeater tax territory and get above that $5 million threshold, let's say now where you exceed it by $7 million and the penalty is $7 million, I mean, that's a penalty, but that's a little bit easier to stomach than, well, my payroll is I have a team that's got a payroll that's good enough to be $7 million over the threshold, but now my penalty is $17 million or whatever the heck it would be. That's a lot different way to look at it. You know, and a lot. Obviously, I would assume that for most people, no matter how much money you have, I mean, you know, you don't just want to be pissing away money, for lack of a better term.
Who wouldn't want to?
The idea is definitely to discourage even the outliers to stay under the tax threshold and level things out.
I mean, guys, how many times did we hear it last summer and fall is that, the negotiations weren't just about cost certainty and, lowering salaries and the owners getting a bigger percentage on the BRI thing, but the competitive balance issue.
Right.
And so clearly that's kind of a big thing that's going on and went on, and that's why we are where we are, is that there is a desire. And I don't think you can ever get professional basketball to be like this. I don't think you can have 30 cities and 30 cities can compete for a championship. I don't know that professional basketball will ever be like that. But clearly they want it to be more along those lines. So we shall see as the years unfold how close they got to their goal.
Before we let you go real quick, do you see Oklahoma City making it to the finals, or is someone else going to beat them there?
Despite last night's meltdown that was almost rescued with the phenomenal Kobe performance, I'm still in the camp of thinking that the Lakers are the toughest out in the West. The Oklahoma City's great, love them, but the size inside and Kobe's late game shot making ability, while it didn't win the game for them last night, maybe Andrew Bynum will have learned his lesson and realized not to pop off at the mouth. Number one, and going forward, I think that. Oklahoma City may have the talent and the horses, but maybe there's still one more year away. Maybe they still have to endure some pain in the playoffs for one more year and lose the series if they're good enough to win, but just for whatever reason they can't close the deal in an important game or two in that series. So I'm still of the belief that the Lakers get out of the Western Conference, but it could be Oklahoma City or it could be San Antonio. But my choice is still the LA Lakers.
It's going to be an interesting conference semis and a conference finals. Unfortunately, the Mavericks will not be a part of it.
I'm going to be far less emotionally invested.
It's funny when we were talking on the way up here, and another thing that I thought about as it relates to the Mavs is I wonder if you guys remember how the 2008 season went down and the 2000 Avery's last year, mm-hmm. and that team looked at itself all of a sudden with a handful of games left in the season, and Dirk had been hurt, and you know, he had that nasty ankle and knee injury, and then had to come back and play several games with a brace on it there at the end of the season. And it was really a very heroic effort by Dirk to do what he did. But if you'll remember, that team down the stretch in the final 10 games was looking at the standings and was like, oh, man, what's going to happen? Are we going to be able to make it into the playoffs? And they were able to rally and play some good games against teams around them in the standings, and that propelled them just enough to get in there. And then, of course, they got their butt kicked by New Orleans. And I kind of wonder if we saw – you know, we always want to make comparisons with teams, and I kind of wonder if that's a little bit of the comparison this year. Is this team, with a handful of games to go in the regular season, all of a sudden was having to have the serious discussion of, oh, my God, we might not get in. And then they were able to lift themselves up and play enough good games against teams around them in the standings and beat the teams that they were supposed to beat in a few games late in the year, and that gave them enough momentum to get in there. And then, of course, they were summarily dismissed very, very quickly, much like they were in 2008. Maybe that's a little bit of a comparison for this thing. And that, you know, that team underwent a significant change in the off season that next year, and they made a coaching change. And obviously, this thing I don't think is going to do that, but it certainly is going to make a significant change in terms of personnel. One would have to think so. So, yeah. If we look for comparisons, maybe that's another one to throw out there.
Yeah, I definitely felt some parallels between that year and this season. And the other thing that I really felt was I was getting a vibe on was that this year I felt like they were kind of beaten down by the schedule, and you know, they kind of seemed to understand that it would take everything truly falling into place for it to be their year for a deep run, and there was maybe a little bit of sense of relief when it was all over. Okay, now let's refocus and reload. And I think obviously in 08 they had the same feeling because they were obviously fatigued on Avery almost as much or more than they were fatigued on this year's schedule. So you had that fatigue, beat down, disappointment, yet relief. And obviously that was a successful reloading simply because 3 seasons later you had a title. So let's hope that
The amazing thing about it, Rylan, is that we've gone all this time and we haven't even delved into, all of the things. You know, I'm getting ready to do like a postmortem, and I've written some of it. And so some of the things that you heard me say are kind of thoughts I've already put down to paper for this thing that I'm doing for DallasBasketball.com. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the things there is that I've kind of gone over some stuff. You know, I mean, it's no Maverick Outsider Report, of course. I mean, that's the greatest thing out there to check out on the internet when it comes to the Mavericks. But
it's high praise.
But yeah, there you go. But I was going to write something, you know, for those guys. And you know, we haven't even delved into, you know, the unique aspects of last year of how many things fell into place. And I don't think last year was a luck. I don't think last year was a fluke. But I do think it was unique, and I do think it was special, and I do think it was a convergence of a lot of things that you just don't see very often in this game. Right. And, you know, last year in the playoff run, Dirk's fourth quarter scoring was the highest of anybody, or the second highest of anyone, and the highest of anybody involved in a championship run, since they could go back on that research. And I think 2003 is as far as they can go back on per quarter scoring, at least really easily anyway. And then, you know, the Mavs last year averaged 8.8 made threes per fourth quarter, which was, 8.8 made threes per game, which was the most of any NBA champion in terms of three-point shooting per game. The most of any champ since the three-pointer came into the league 30 years ago, just over 30 years ago. Their crunch time or clutch defense, which is last 5 minutes of the game, and it's a six-point game either way. Opponents shot something like 31% in those situations against them last year and went 5 for 40 on threes. They had 3 15-point comebacks last year, and the research that we had, no one could go back any farther than 2000 on that, but no champion has had to have those kind of miracle comebacks to win games. Three of them in one playoff run. I mean, maybe you get one, maybe two, but certainly you're not getting three in a route to winning a championship. So,
right.
They're just, you know, a lot of things. You know, it doesn't take. Hey, look, it counts, man. It doesn't take away from it at all. And in almost some way, it you know, it adds to the mythical lore of that championship and how special it was, because just so many great things went right, and it makes for such an awesome story that you know, maybe somebody should write a book about how they went from being a fan to covering that team.
Ayo.
Right.
Ayo.
Yeah.
I also think it shows how difficult it is, and it's talked about a lot, you know, how difficult it is for a team to win an NBA title. And we look back at our, you know, our lifetimes. You have guys like Michael Jordan and Shaq and Magic and Bird and all these guys that are the, you know, some of the best ever that dominate everything. And then for any of the other guys to sneak in, even guys as great as Hakeem Olajuwon and Dirk Nowitzki, things have to fall just so perfectly to get that ring. So it's obviously something to relish.
Dr. J only won one.
Right, yeah. Great example. Great example.
Moses Malone only won one. Barkley didn't win any. Ewing didn't win any. Malone didn't win any.
Yep.
Man.
Dusher hasn't won
Iverson
one yet.
Iverson didn't win any. I mean, great, great players. You know, I mean, that's why Charles Barkley was giving LeBron such a hard time about the not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven comment, was that I think he felt like it was just so insulting to all the people who busted their butt every year and never even got one.
Right.
And it was such a slap in the face to the whole notion of how hard it is just to get one, to sit there and talk about how you're going to win seven. I mean, God, you know, but they've stopped that stuff. And, you know, and so what I said earlier, not that I'm obviously rooting for them, but at least I find them a whole lot easier to stomach this year. Because, you know, I think even they, while they may not want to admit it, realized the error of their ways last year, and that show that they were putting on, that dog and pony show that they were putting on last year. So even, I think to a lot of people, they've probably become a little bit more palatable this year. At least they don't make you sick to your stomach.
Well, now I will have to get rid of that. Mark Folliwell loves the Miami Heat article that I was reading.
What a backhanded compliment that is. Hey, they don't make me sick to my stomach anymore.
Hey, they don't suck that bad.
Considering the starting point, that's impressive, just considering the starting point.
There's a lot of people in this town that feel the exact same way Mark does, so.
Yeah.
All right, well, yeah. Well, Mark, we appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule. And
yeah, I'm standing outside of FC Dallas Stadium right now, ready to go in and watch FC Dallas and Seattle. So,
well, hopefully they get you a good W tonight.
I hope so, man. I hope so. So I'm looking forward to it. And as always, look forward to and enjoy talking with you guys. And it may be a while before we do it again, but maybe it won't. So we'll just call anytime.
Sounds
good.
We'll
just see. Thanks, man. Thanks, Mark.
All right, you got it. I'll try to curtail the cussing next time.
No, don't worry.
No, more cussing, please. Yes. Thanks, man. Well, there he goes, Mr. Mark Folliwell, your TV voice of the Dallas Mavericks. Always a great guest here for us on Mavericks Outside
Awesome,
Report.
Awesome stuff.
We are going to take a quick break and come back with some playoff NBA nuggets, are we not?
We'll do something.
Let's do it.
We'll do something.
Something next, MOR.
Across the street featuring the greatest band in the world, Morris Day and the Time.
That's right. Y'all know what time it is, don't you? Don't
yep.
you? Don't you? It's time for some NBA Nuggets. NBA Nuggets, that's when we like to take a look around the NBA, see what's happening, see what people are talking about.
Thanks to Mark Folliwell, by the way.
Look at it. Yes, another huge man-sized segment from old buddy Mark. Old big bro. We'd like to look around the NBA and analyze things through our Mav-colored glasses, because we wear them more or less all the time. And we will do so forthcoming within the segment ahead of you, as soon as Brian pulls up his notes.
I'm ready.
First nugget.
Ron Butler, tough juice, for real. In game one, game one of the opening round playoff series against the Memphis Grizzlies, Ron Butler fractured his left hand.
And this man is a hoss.
He had the world's fastest shower, too, apparently. He got
they were joking about that.
He got evaluated, and then he was showered by the end of that game.
On TNT, I saw him joking about that.
Yeah. So the results had him out for a while, but apparently a while was just maybe a day or two because he's still playing.
We know this guy is one of the toughest dudes out there. I mean, he pushed his own kneecap from out underneath his quadricep back into place.
When the hell was that?
Last year when he tore his patellar tendon.
He did that?
Yeah.
Dude, that's...
I'm going Dirk again.
That's disgusting.
You have not heard that story.
I haven't heard that story.
He did that so that he could...
I mean, I knew what happened to him.
...walk off the court.
He said...
Ouch!
He said he did that because he did not want to see... He didn't want to have his family... see him leave the court and on a stretcher.
He was afraid that, you know, obviously that would be kind of jarring for them. And
I saw on a baseball game a dude's lead leg when he was hitting get stuck and his kneecap like move, and that was gross. But he damn sure didn't try to put it back in place.
I don't look at that stuff.
You said this was underneath his.
It was either inside or underneath his quad.
Yuck!
Because the patellar tendon came loose and
yuck.
Just went up, you know.
And said, I salute you, Caron Butler.
That's why the entire organization basically bowed to him in awe, because that's the...
Wow.
That's like the paramount tough assiness thing.
No doubt. That is sick.
I've ever heard anybody do.
And then a few weeks later, he's in the locker room doing stretches, whatever he can to make sure he puts himself in a spot to be ready to play in the finals if they get to the finals. Such an inspiration for that team.
Huge, huge. And so now he breaks his hand.
Yeah, I saw him wearing some sort of weird-ass brace or glove.
He's wearing like a club now. He has to be inspected by the ref.
He's like the only thing left that I can really root for out there with no ill will in the playoffs.
Chris Paul?
I don't like Chris Paul, but
Kobe Bryant.
But because of Caron, I can root for him with no ill will.
Mike Brown.
You know you like Reggie Evans, dude. Come on.
he grabs them balls.
I'm
he don't care.
I'm such a Reggie Evans fan.
he don't care.
I guess that's it. It's Caron. I mean, obviously, I feel the same way about Chandler, but they're up against the Heat. They're going to get rolled, so it's kind of they're out of my mind.
I think they're losing.
Yeah, they're down 11
Yeah, they're going home
right
tonight, so it's whatever.
Bless them.
Next nugget.
Now, I will say... Putting real talk out there, I have not read this article yet.
Tweet me.
There's that too. everything that was making the rounds in a big way yesterday was the Grantland piece.
About Odin?
No.
Oh, I was just taking a guess.
No, but we can talk about that too.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
We'll talk about that later, Nugget.
Sounds good.
This current Nugget is from Steve Kerr, where apparently he said there's a case for a 20-year-old age limit in the NBA. Now, again, I did not get to read this article.
Right.
For obvious reasons, you can tell.
What his case actually was.
It could have been like, oh, it's because they like gum. And they like to wear their shoes a certain way. You learn at 20 that it's okay to wear it this way.
But I think that regardless of what his case is, I think that the product of the NBA in terms of quality of play has obviously been more uneven since it became more in vogue to draft guys that were underclassmen. Back, you know, going back to really, I guess, the early 90s is really when that truly flourished. I mean, you had select guys throughout the 70s and 80s who would skip their senior year or something like that. But, you know, it was obviously a very well-defined, very discreetly defined path from NCAA to the NBA. You didn't have foreign influence. You didn't have anything else. You obviously, other than, I guess, Daryl Dawkins, you didn't have anybody come out of high school. So that just was so set in stone, and it worked. But as things began to change and began to tailor themselves on an individual player's basis, you know, NBA teams kind of got screwed up on who to pick. You think of all the horrible – think of the degradation of the draft in the last 10 years, 15 years. The draft is just – almost nobody builds from the draft anymore. Sam Presti builds out of the draft in Oklahoma City, and he's hailed as the smartest man in the universe. 20 years ago, everybody did that. 25 years ago, everybody did that. Sure, there's always busts. There will always be busts. The level of and frequency of busts and the level and frequency of just flat out not giving a crap about who's available beyond pick number 8 has increased tenfold, you know, since the early 90s. So if that's what they want to counteract, if they want to make the product better, then put an age limit on there, man. That's the that's their business. If they want to do that, if they want to say
put a ring on it,
if they want to say as a league we don't want to hire anybody under 21 or whatever, and the union signs off on it, then they're good, you know. And I've got no beef with it. Until the union signs off on it, it's a
moot anyway,
yeah,
right?
It wouldn't happen until that next, what is it, 5 or 6 years down the road?
Right.
But I like the idea of putting a limit on it or a cap to where they have to be at least 20.
I mean, the NFL does it, and it
works for them. But there's a limit now, right? You have to have at least 1 year of high school or be 19 by a certain date, right?
Right.
So what's Kerr's getting at, like, upping the age limit?
Yeah.
Why does
– he probably wants to do that to make the NCAA have a better product, which to that I say, let the NCAA fix their own screwed up problem. Let's focus on what would optimize the situation here for pro ball, because the NCAA is a mess to begin with.
Why does the NFL do it? Is that more along the lines of the NCAA, or is it more along the lines of actually protecting the athlete who may or may not be mentally and physically ready for the violent?
That's the line of reasoning I've always gotten.
Because I can easily see
as
that,
I eat M&Ms, but it wouldn't shock me if there was some kind of collusion going on there, because college football is big.
It's
business.
Violent. It's violent. And
big
it's lucrative.
Business.
It's very lucrative.
And if you got your best guys leaving a year earlier than they already can, that would hurt them significantly. Okay, now I'm done with M&Ms. Back to broadcasting.
Well, let me ask you this: do you think that? I don't want to ask the question. It's kind of hard for me to phrase it. Along the lines of the NFL, how it translates to the NBA, do you kind of feel like maybe they want to give these kids an extra year of maturity, an extra year to develop a little more physically, a little more to hone their skills? And do you buy into that? Because, you know, like LeBron James, when he was 18 years old, he had – 19 years old, he had the NBA body. But someone like I'm going to say Anthony Davis, who's a 7-footer, but he's a little skinny kid. You know, I mean, he could use – along the lines of Brandon Wright, which I've said, he could use another year in the gym or an off season of you know, weightlifting or whatever. You know what I mean? Does that hold any validity with you guys, or is that kind of?
I think that's a cop out, maybe, but it probably has some validity to it. I think the big thing is that GMs would be saving themselves if this happens to where it's a 20 year old limit.
They'd be making their own jobs easier.
Tremendously easier.
How so?
Because you get more info about guys before you draft
their
them.
Sample size is going to be so much bigger.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
So much bigger compared to what it is for a high schooler. They're going to see what? I don't know how many games are in college, but maybe 30. So now they'd be able to see 60 games.
Sure.
Theoretically, 60 games of a player to get more of an understanding of what kind of player
more evaluation.
Right.
Game. Right.
It helps everybody. It's going to help the NCAA. It's going to help the NBA. I don't see why this doesn't happen.
The reason it won't happen, and this is because obviously we learned through this process that both sides of this ownership and union both have a tendency to be short-sighted on some stuff. As a group, obviously there are individuals on both sides that probably get it. But the reason that it won't happen is because the NBA will look at that and they'll see the median age of the league going up, service time going up, and they'll say that's going to translate to higher salaries. Younger equals cheaper. They're going to look at it from a short-sighted, myopic view and say younger equals cheaper, we want cheaper, we're good. Rather than saying, if I put myself in a position to draft better and scout better, then I'll have less dumb money on my books, and the money I'm spending will be spent better on people who can actually play and not on Dominique Jones for $2 million of riding the pine. And then as a result, you're in a better position financially through that way. And then maybe the union is still happy because median salary still goes up because they have, you know. I always remember when the 1999 CBA happened. This is the example in my brain. When the 1999 CBA happened, and we had rookie scale really come in earnest like it is now. I remember people saying Sam Perkins is out of a job because of the new CBA. And to some degree it was true, because he was not worth enough for what he expected to make, and there were so many guys who were making less that it just didn't make sense, even though for like a playoff team or whoever, they probably would have been glad to have him be 14th man or something, you know? He was just an example that I remember people making at the time. So always when I think about median salary going up as a result of an age requirement, that's who I think of, but that's kind of the example. So that's why I don't think it'll happen. It's because NBA owners are too short-sighted to understand that they can save themselves from stupid spending, even though median salaries would go up.
Cuban said he's a fan of doing this. So
there you go. I generally think he's pretty smart about those things, and he sees it the right way.
Give me an argument for keeping it the same.
Keeping it the way it is? We let kids go off to war. Why are we depriving them of their opportunity for money?
We're not. Go play in Greece.
I know.
That's a bet. I hate that argument. My employer requires that I have a degree. Someone else's employer might require that they're 21. That's life.
Right.
That's life in
the fast lane?
The fast lane and life in the real world. So it's not a liberty issue or anything like that, but that is probably
that will be the
emotional appeal that is made to try and argue the other side of it. But I would love to see it be actually 21 personally.
I think at that point it's a little excessive, but 20 I can live with. I think 21's a little harsh.
Word, next nugget.
Is it MIP?
Yes.
Yep.
It's a place to pee. Ryan Anderson, Mr. Anderson of the Orlando Magic, was your most improved player of the year this year.
I don't like that at all.
You think that's just because of Dwight?
It's a bit. You got a guy who is a bit. You got a guy who just jacks up threes because he's got the preeminent big man. Would you have given some spare that played with Hakeem or Duncan or Shaq in their primes most improved player?
No.
It needs to be a more well-rounded player, I feel like.
I think I'm going with Ibaka. I really feel like he took his game up significantly to a different level than I anticipated him.
He was 11th
this season.
He was 11th on this list.
Who were the top five?
Ryan Anderson, Ersan Ilyasova, Nikola Pekovic, Andrew Bynum, and Greg Monroe were your top five. Jeremy Lin was sixth.
Bynum I can get with. I didn't follow Pekovic or Ilyasova.
Both of them definitely.
Pekovic beasted against Dallas in one game.
He beasted all year, really.
And then
Ilyasova was more of a
Paul George? He didn't win it because he went bananas against the Mavericks.
Wasn't he a rookie?
Paul George? No.
Oh.
No.
Second year?
Yeah. Ilyasova was more of a second half of the year.
Who else did you say besides after Bynum?
Monroe.
Oh, he was on a bad team. Meh.
There was a Maverick who actually got consideration for this.
Brandon Wright?
Yes. He was way, 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 way down the
list. He would have been up on that top 15 or 10 if he had played all year and gotten Odom's minutes all year. The way he produced statistically, I think he would have gotten a lot of attention.
Maybe I was just oblivious to Ibaka's effectiveness last year, and it just didn't sink in with me, but this year it seemed like it all just came to the forefront for me.
One of my favorite guys, Goran Dragic, he was 7th on the list. I'm a fan of that kid. I like him a lot. I wouldn't be sad if he came here.
I wouldn't be sad either, except for the fact that he would be a consolation prize for something much more significant.
Bold prediction for next year, Ricky Rubio wins this award next year.
Dude, if he wins it.
Shut it down.
Drop the mic.
Shut it down and go home.
Yeah. Dude, love that.
Bold prediction, man.
Love.
Just for you. Just for my man.
I love Ricky Rubio.
All right, next nugget. The Nets got a new logo.
It's so generic, man. It's so black and white, but that's Jay-Z's style, though. He loves that simplicity.
Did y'all catch wind of the article that some guy wrote about this?
No.
They spoke about it on the ticket, and some, I'm assuming, old white guy. I don't know if he writes for the Washington Post, or the New York Times, or USA Today, or what have you, but he wrote an article about this, and how he did not get fired is beyond me.
Rollin's furiously looking it up right now.
Man, I wish Rollin or anyone could throw me a bone here to be like, yeah, man, I know exactly what you're talking about because I feel like I'm on an island. But seriously.
Okay, I'm looking at it right now. Hang on.
They had a segment on the
Just straight up derogatory.
New York Post, Phil Mushnick is standing by the racial comments he made in his column last Friday about Jay-Z designing the Brooklyn Nets logo.
That name's familiar. Mushnick.
Mushnick.
That's familiar.
He may be a reputable guy. I'm just saying.
And I quote, New York Post is generally just pot stirrers and bear pokers, generally. Although sometimes,
that's like headline porn.
Although sometimes for good measure, yeah. Like maybe they're poking or stirring things that don't otherwise get poked or stirred by the New York Times, who follow a single agenda that emanates from Washington, D.C. But anyway, they are also they do a bit, quite a bit. So you kind of have to accept that they're going to do some stupid crap. Anyway, the quote, why the Brooklyn Nets when they can be the New York N's? And I'm sure he didn't write, surely he didn't write the N-word. Surely he wrote N-N's. I can't imagine, but it says, that's what it says here is ends.
Right.
Mushnick wrote in his Friday column entitled, Nets on Jay-Z track, the cheerleaders could be the Brooklyn bitches or hoes. Now that, that's funny.
Wow.
Anyway, I don't, he said, want to be Jay-Z hip, then go all the way. So I don't guess that he is criticizing the logo itself. He is criticizing, he's just
taking
a shot at Jay-Z because it's easy, okay. and draws eyeballs to his headline. No, and here we go. I'm never comfortable using that word. That's the way I was raised. Shame on my parents. But he said, I'm never comfortable using that word. The one time I spelled it out for accuracy, I was widely considered as racist, condemned as racist. So either way, I'm a bigot. Well, dude, you, regardless of whatever logic you may or may not have that may or may not be valid, you just can't, you cannot win in that situation.
No.
So just don't even try.
Exactly. But yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Getting back to the Nugget.
This guy's an idiot. But this logo, this logo is a complete ripoff of the Raiders, and I do not approve. It looks like crap.
Let me see it.
Get back to writing rhymes. Sorry, this looks like crap.
Earl Case needs a big fan of it because he loves simplicity. So.
It looks awful.
And he's a big
fan. I don't mind it. Yeah, that's a good word, simplicity.
He's a big fan of the Hope.
I like simplicity, but it's awful.
So is Jay-Z going to furiously come up with rhymes with Mushnick now?
What rhymes with Mushnick?
I'm trying to think. That's some Bushnick. from Mushnick.
That guy should definitely rethink his priorities in life, and he's an idiot, but... This logo is bad too. It's bad. It's horrible.
It's black. It's just black.
The color is fine. I mean, you can have a team with colors of just black and white. I mean, that's kind of making a cool statement. But it's just,
is Brooklyn going to go above or is it going to go below? Like I'm looking at over here.
I would think it'd have to go above.
Right.
I would think. I mean, you want to promote Brooklyn. So
I don't spend a lot of time on logos and stuff, and especially with other teams, I couldn't care any less about, which the Nets fall into that category.
You're
going to
have
so.
A keen interest in on them.
I have a keen
summer.
Interest in their free agent. I don't have a keen interest in their organization.
How about their coach?
I'm done with him.
Oh, okay, you're done with him.
Unless he wants to drink some Burra. Am I going to get in trouble for that?
Probably. Probably. Are you still looking at that article?
I don't understand his basis. Harry says. Mushnick added, such obvious, wishful, and ignorant mischaracterizations of what I write are common. I don't call black men the N-word. I don't regard young women as bitches and whores. I don't glorify the use of assault weapons and drugs. Jay-Z, on the other hand, is he the only NBA owner allowed to call black men N's? So he's just taking the old, tired, stupid approach of let's vilify a rapper or whatever because they... like to sing or like to rhyme about bitches and hoes. Well, guess what? It's been going on for 30 years. It's going to keep going on. And it doesn't bother anybody under the age of 50, so just get over it. Maybe 40.
Sloppy Joes. That would be my contribution.
White boy rapping.
There you go.
All right, next nugget.
Indeed. What is next?
How shitty would it be to be a Bulls fan right now?
Dude.
That's awful.
Dude.
I'm sorry. That just sucks.
You think we're feeling bad about the Mavs right now? Just think about being the one seed. You have the reigning MVP.
I hate that. I just hate it.
You lose him in, what was it, game one? It was game one in the last 2 minutes of a game that was pretty much over. You lose Joakim Noah in game four. You still, unfortunately, have Carlos Boozer on your team. You're upset about that because you still have Carlos Boozer.
What happened to him?
You're just in a... He just stinks, man. And he can't figure out if he wants to have hair or not.
He's got an acne problem. What's up with that, man?
I don't know.
Dude, I had acne like when I was 16. I think he's older than me, right?
I think so.
Probably, yeah.
But, man, just think about that. You're the number one seed. ready to go have a run against the Miami Heat, and now you're scrapping and clawing to hold on to beat the 76ers.
And it ain't going to happen. Right. They're going to take you. I mean, yeah, that's just awful. Horrible game, horrible year for Mavs fans, but wow.
You remember how we felt when we played the Kings and Chris Webber went down and we beat the Kings and then Dirk went down with his knee, I think, when we lost?
Yep. Yeah. That's about how it feels. Except even then we knew San Antonio was the best team and probably going on to win the title, whereas if you're Chicago coming into the playoffs, you've got a pretty good feeling that you're going to be able to give Miami a run, and I think they could have. I don't know if they would have beat them.
I think they would have gone the limit.
They would have been a very competitive series.
How does it? Ugh. How does it feel to be a guy on that team? Just, you know,
just want to get Cancun 1-2-3 Cancun, man. Nick Van Exel said it best. Just get me home and let's reboot.
That's just gotta suck.
It's like when you're playing Nintendo with your friend. And they jump out on you on RBI Baseball 11-0 in the first inning. Just press reset and play again.
Hey, well, what's over there? Reset.
Well, to play the other side, they were number one most of the year, right, without him. I mean, playing a majority of their games without him, right?
Yeah, but it's...
Now the Noah injury, that absolutely, the backbreaker. But he's coming back tomorrow night, right?
I think he's going to try to. But it's a different thing to survive the regular season versus having to try to survive a playoff series without your leading guy.
Who would they be in line to play, assuming they... I mean, I know that they're down 3-2.
They would be playing the Boston-Atlanta winner, where Boston's still...
I can't figure out Boston, man.
I guess this sets us up for an Eastern Conference Finals where maybe Boston can try to Dallas-Miami. I said it last week. That's our only shot.
Rondo.
Is if Boston can Dallas Miami somehow with all those old guys and obviously Rondo.
Dude puts up 15 assists in his sleep, but he has Jason Kidd syndrome.
Yeah, he does.
Where he does not like layups.
Next nugget. In Denver two nights ago.
Did you see this?
We had a random appearance on the court by this? Felicia from Friday.
I saw your tweet.
Yastina. I need to dub a tape.
Hey, Greg, can I borrow your VCR?
I need to borrow your VCR right quick.
I need
quick.
To dub a tape. Y'all stanchy.
So Felicia ran out on the court, huh?
No, you look up. A better dressed version of Felicia. Same general gait walking along and same general, you know, like light socket hair. Is just wandering out on the court. Probably how far, Brian? Probably 5-6 feet onto the court?
Yeah,
what was the deal here?
She's a stalker, hardcore stalker of Kenyon Martin. She had been stalking
like
him.
Like a for real crazy stalker. Like.
Yeah.
And somehow she swindled tickets to the game, got her way down to the courtside.
She had been banned from the arena, but she somehow found a way to get tickets.
Wow.
Courtside.
And sit courtside where you're...
It's hard to get courtside, dude.
It's very hard. And if you want to pay, you can do it, although I imagine for the playoffs it's even tougher, but... To be right there in plain view of so many security personnel, probably just a situation where they hadn't seen her in so long, it wasn't even in front of mind. There's so much going on for a playoff game. But yeah, dude, middle of the game, late in the game, wasn't it?
Like, no, it was in a couple minutes before halftime.
Oh, was it? I thought it was third quarter for some reason.
No.
She just kind of wanders out there. She had to be drunk, high, or both, though, because she was like...
Confused.
Just kind of wandering and kind of... She's walking like Felicia from Friday. That's why I said... It's Felicia from Friday.
And apparently Mark Spears from Yahoo, who was there, was saying like, or tweeting that she was saying, "Where's Kenyon? Where's Kenyon?"
Oh, yeah, because she's
surely
Kenyon
was
Martin.
She was cracked out on something, man.
So that's crazy. I mean, it somehow finds a way to go back to that. It's not that. But how bad, now this is... Making it light on the subject now, but how bad of a stalker do you have to be to not know that Kenyon Martin's still on the Nuggets?
You have failed at your stalking activities strongly.
Wait. Oh,
wait,
crap.
Kenyon's not here?
Somebody just needs to tell her he went to China.
What happened
was... let her go there and she'll never find her way back.
Wow. She'll end up going to China next.
Yeah, she'll be in China.
And she'll be like...
In about 2 years, she'll go to L.A. Yeah.
So did someone tackle her, or was she like...
Some guy that was sitting near her got up and grabbed her arm and started to pull her off. And just about that time, I think a ref walked over there too. And then within a split second...
Was there any resistance
security,
or anything? Or
No, she was so out of it, she just kind of waddled.
Like, thanks, man.
Just waddling.
Weird, man.
Appreciate it.
I didn't hear about this. That is a nugget. That's a true nugget right there.
It is. Next nugget.
What were we going to talk about?
You want to talk about Odin, don't you?
Yeah, Odin. Yeah. Boom.
That hit today. So we have some revelations about Greg Oden's history as an alcoholic. So he's just going to take a year off. Obviously, he's been hurt and everything, but he's going to take a year off from basketball next year, try and get right.
So while he was nursing his leg, he went to the bottle, huh? Or is this back in high school when he was...
I think he said it led him to go drinking. I don't know. I heard about this today, but I didn't get a good chance to read.
So he's going to rehab next year? Or he's sitting out a season to get himself together?
Just cleaning himself up.
How's his degenerative knee? I mean...
Still degenerative.
Was Portland even considering offering him a job or a spot on the bench?
Well, he already got cut. He was already released.
Remember, we talked about that a couple months ago.
That sounds familiar now that we're talking about
but it. But it was actually interesting.
A lot of people were kind of thinking maybe they could vulture him on a minimum deal next year or something and just kind of nurse him back and,
right. Some people were
and baby
saying
him along.
About Dallas.
Dallas was in that list. And
right. Okay, yeah. That's coming back to me now.
He's off the table altogether, and there you go.
Could add Kevin Durant.
Man, is it? That's a bus label, right? I mean,
huge.
Okay, it's all right. All right, cool. Making sure we're on the same page here.
It's unfortunate for him, though. Bad spin of events for him. What's going on?
Grades.
Oh, we're going to grades now. We're gonna take a look at the Mavericks.
Speaking of bus, we're gonna transition into grades now.
Ayo,
you're so funny.
We're going to look at each individual Maverick or a good chunk of them, time permitting, and then give them grades. Let's start with Brandon Wright. First name that came to mind. Brandon Wright.
Solid B+. Expectations were exceeded, but you can't get an A if you're, you know, that limited.
Yeah, I'll go B pretty much for the same reasons. I mean, I didn't have any expectation in him playing the way he played late down the stretch, gave me lots of hope for, you know, a little bit of impact in the playoffs, and then playoffs he kind of flopped a little bit. So like I've told you guys, hopefully we can beef him up a little bit in the off season. And
you want him to go to some Whataburger?
Yeah, whatever it takes. I mean, he doesn't seem like he's a he's like a
set him up with
weight, gain some weight, and let's
set
go.
Set him up with Delonte. And
some
hit
Popeyes,
all the drive-thrus.
KFC.
Did you see Delonte's series of breakfast tweets the other day?
I saw that.
He tweeted a countertop with a package of bacon, a package of sausage, and some eggs, and some cheese, and everything. And then a little bit later, he tweeted a picture of making eggs on the skillet and some bacon going. And then a little bit later, he tweeted a picture of his waffles in the oven and everything all on, and then eventually everything all on the plate. And he's sitting in front of the TV getting ready to eat it.
Awesome,
so,
man.
So I'm serious. Okay, Delonte and I are both left-handed, and we both have an obsession with food and drive-thrus. So I think that...
And rap.
I think that, I think that Delonte and I need to team with an amateur filmmaker and make a documentary about fast food, about drive-thrus. I think that could be hilarious.
If I had capital, I would invest in that.
I don't know how it would all flow, but that would be the topic.
That's the vision, you know?
That would be the topic.
Prestige worldwide.
Yeah, so maybe he needs to hook up with, you know, Delonte or... I'll be his personal Whataburger concierge, Chicken Express, you know.
He can come work out with me. Brandon Wright, if you're listening, come hit the weights with yours truly.
Yeah.
You know, let's beef you up, man. I'm hoping you can take the step. The Ibaka step is what I'm going to call it.
I was ready to give him an A- until we got to the playoffs, and then the playoffs just really hurt me hard with that, so I have to drop him to a B. He just looks so lost
in
the playoffs.
He really did.
He wasn't ready, man. He wasn't ready.
Just so lost. Let's go with Sean Marion.
A solid A.
A plus MVP
gave you
of the team.
You needed, gave you everything you needed, was there to plug holes, did a lot of scoring early when Dirk was lost, guarded everybody, threw up a stinker in game 3 of the OKC series, but other than that, can you point to any games where you just felt like he didn't deliver? I don't think so. I mean, he had his post-up game working a little bit, even more so than the last two seasons with Dallas. His defense obviously goes without saying.
Do you want him to even work on the three-point shot?
No.
No.
And the fact that that became a weapon in the series against Oklahoma tells you how well they were coached. Scotty Brooks forced the Mavericks, who could not execute offensively like we talked about with Mark, forced the Mavericks into having to take open shots with Sean Marion on the three-point line because it's so open. You have to let him take it, yet you couldn't get anything else going, so you just took the default, what they gave you. So kudos to Brooks. I don't want him to work on it. He doesn't need to do anything related to that. He needs to be working on post up, push shots, around the rim, all those things, and that's it.
I gave him an A as well.
Yeah, and we can get really in-depth in a later show when we get closer to like draft and free agency and everything, but I think depending on the outlook free agent-wise, I think that there's a really good chance he's here next year.
I find it hard to believe that he won't be.
Right, unless they just fall ass backwards into such a great trade. Because the amnesty thing is most likely going to be used on Haywood.
Yee.
Unless they just fall. You're all about the yee bombs today.
Yeah.
Unless they just really fall into something that's just a total no-brainer, huge win. He's going to be back. He's so versatile. He's played better each consecutive year with Dallas. And he'll be a big part of whatever they do next year, I think. And I think that's why that's again why I want a wingman next year to complement, you know, D. Will and a big man that would give them dribble penetration and some scoring.
Next player, since you brought him up, Brendan Haywood.
A for amnesty. See ya. Get out of here. P for punt.
See ya.
Oh, wow.
Out of here. Never, Damp Jr., I never want to see you again. I wish you well. I don't wish bad things against you. Like there are, you know, other guys that have run through here. Lamar. But A for amnesty. Get out of here.
I'm out.
Tim's on fire tonight.
That is amazing. Yeah, I don't wish any ill will. He seems like a super nice guy. And, you know, I tweeted the other day.
You heard him talk? He's brilliant. He's very analytical, man.
I heard him the other day on Ben and Skin, and he had such a great interview with them. Yes. Talking about what hurt Dallas, talking about how the Lakers or Oklahoma City might fare and everything else. So cerebral, obviously studies the game, and then it just kills me that his motor is what it is. But he's been that way his entire career. It's been very much an up and down, play for the big contract, not a sustained energy level. So I don't expect anything different. So I give him, really, honestly, before the OKC series, I would have given him a C+, just because he did about what he was expected to do and was solid. And, dude, he did a great job on Blake Griffin, on LaMarcus Aldridge, etc. But after what happened in the playoffs and just the complete lack of what I felt to be any kind of fire, I think that has to go down to a solid D-.
Oh.
Or Q, just get out of here. I'm sorry. I hate to see it go down with such a nice guy. Here, Tim, bend this part. It will bend toward you.
Then like Beckham.
Then you can move the mic back to where. Yeah, there you go.
We got it.
Okay. Little physics lesson here. Yeah, I mean, just the effort in the OKC series was so putrid, man. I just can't get over that.
Do you think he was hurt?
He didn't say he was.
He didn't say it, but that doesn't mean he
was. But it made me wonder. Even Kendrick Perkins said that.
Was it game three, like where they ran like the first, I don't know, four of the first five possessions, and where Marion was trying to dump it to him, and he would either
that's on Marion
miss it, drop it, and that's when Carlisle went ape shit.
Control with the ball too, yo, yeah.
That's crazy, totally on Marion, though. I think Marion is that good Eminem. Totally on Marion.
So good.
Bad decision making. So yeah, D-.
You have a C-.
Yeah,
he did what he was supposed to do, but it ended up being funky.
If that effort in OKC, the OKC series had happened in, you know, March, and then the rest of the year was the same, then I'd be giving him a C-, too. It's just the timing just beat me down. Next,
Jason Kidd. Tough guy to grade.
Yeah,
B-.
I give him an A+ for the playoffs. Well, no, I take that back. I'll give him an A- for the playoffs on account of not being able to knock down open shots. But he balled in every other sense of the word.
Did he ball so hard?
But on the whole, the balance of the season, I'll give him a B+. I think he did what was expected, but the injuries hurt him. And so many late game turnovers from him.
That's why I go B-. I mean, they were lost without him, but you can't. Those are uncharacteristic, like, you know what I mean? Those bonehead
turnovers. No matter what else you do, we expect you to be the basketball genius because that's who you are. And you are that, except all of a sudden the last 3 minutes of the game, you know, boneheaded. Yeah.
You're a Hall of Famer, crunch time. You've been clutch. You've shown to be clutch. We expect you to be clutch. You can't be having that.
Got to give him a B. Just meet y'all in the middle, pretty much. Just seemed like he did what he was supposed to do except for the late game execution. But he survived this year, which was hard to do, all things considered, for that man.
He deserves special credit for that over the other guys just based on the age factor, you know?
Yeah. Delonte West.
B minus.
I have to give him the same grade that I gave B plus. I mean, I think I gave him B plus. I had no expectations for him really. I mean, they essentially pulled him out of his car, right? He was living in his car. Yeah. Or is that bogus?
Pretty much.
You know, and for him to be, he had, you know, key stretches where he was huge for the Mavs. I mean, he fought through the injuries. I mean, I think he kind of showed his tough juice, so to speak, there. And, you know, I think he was very, 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 very effective against OKC. Maybe not to the extent that, you know, that JJ was last year, but he was still effective when they needed him nonetheless. And so, I mean, B plus for me.
Yeah, I'm in the same realm. I give him more like a B or B minus just because he was asked, and it's not his fault, but he was asked to do too many things too well for this team to excel. I think I talked about it last week. He's a pretty good ball handler and can run your offense pretty well, but not good enough for the Mavericks who are scoring challenged and athleticism challenged to really execute their offense well. He's a pretty good defender, but not good enough to put on Russell Westbrook or Chris Paul.
I agree with that.
He's a pretty good scorer. He got you more offense than I think we had anticipated, but not enough to make an impact on a game like a J.J. Barea would. So all that put together, it's not his fault, but that's the production in the role that he was asked to be in, so I'd give him more like a B- as a result of that. But I really like the guy. Obviously, I love his intangibles. I like his attitude. He'll be big for any team that is open to that. I don't think it's going to be a fit here in Dallas because of the holes that they're going to need to fill. Unless the J. Kidd thing doesn't happen, then maybe he's your backup point guard. Let's say you get D. Will. Let's be honest here. You can foresee a situation where you have D. Will and then J. Kidd playing 18 minutes. But
at the most.
But really, you don't need that with D-Will right now. He can go out and play 37 minutes a game. So you could make do with more of a Delonte type if you had to. I didn't necessarily like what I saw when he ran the offense at all times. But that four-game stretch early in the year when Kidd was out, I thought he did well. So maybe with the right amount of preparation and everything, he would be better on a long-term, you know, with a full training camp and a regular schedule with more practice and stuff. But he can't be a two-guard for us because we need size and we need explosiveness, either penetration on the dribble or ability to score, you know, in bunches. One of those two things. We need that from our two-guard. So that's where I'm at.
I gave him a B-plus based off of where he came from and how he ended up finishing out, doing all the things he did. It's kind of a shame that he got sick leading up to the OKC series because you didn't really get that full reference of what he actually could do. Now, that doesn't mean he was going to be able to stop Russell Westbrook, but maybe you got something a little bit more out of him. But it's just unfortunate for that aspect. But he's going to be if he doesn't find a home in Dallas, he's going to find a home somewhere.
I think he played his way into a multi-year deal. Somebody's going to take a chance on him now.
Agreed.
Which they wouldn't have done before the year. Next.
Vince Carter.
He is another victim of his role being asked to do too much. But I'm gonna have to give him a C+. He just didn't, and it's part of it's not his fault, but he just didn't make shots when we needed him to make shots. He had flashes, and when the flashes were there, they were good, and he had a better attitude than any of us ever expected, played better D than any of us ever expected, and was way more fired up and into his teammates than any of us ever expected. But, you know, at the end of the day, when you pull up for an 18-foot jumper that's more or less open, I need you to knock that down. That's your job on this team, and he didn't do it enough.
I'm not sure anything else needs to be said. I agree completely. C+.
I'm going to give him a C, just because.
He only shot 41% from the field this year.
That's rough.
Yeah.
That's rough.
I can't say I expected a lot from him.
It's tough.
I know, man.
I can't say I expected a lot from him, but like I said, you know, he showed me some brilliance early on, and then that kind of changed my expectation for him. And then I feel like when the Mavs and me needed him the most, he wasn't banging on.
But that goes to what Ryan.
He wasn't banging one, man.
Yeah, man, he just wasn't up to it. He could be. He could be a page of plus. He could be
your eighth man.
He's your eighth or ninth guy who's going to come in situationally. He's going to spread the floor. He's going to be open. He's going to be wide open from the arc because you're going to have other options on the floor with him and not him out there with Dirk and nobody else. And then that just doesn't work for him, which unless you play him and Jet and Dirk together, which you saw some later, and he exploited that to some degree later in the season, he just can't – he's not up to it, man, although – he definitely, I thought, played to his contract, and you know, Mark enlightened us with the idea of that stretch provision in the CBA, which I think significantly lowers the chances that he will be here next year, which I'm okay with. I want the wing positions to get younger, stat, especially if Sean Marion is still going to be there, which it looks like he will be.
Let's go with one more. Let's go with Roddy.
F.
Well, we can't amnesty Roddy, so P for punt. See ya.
Wow.
Wouldn't want to be ya.
See ya.
F. No doubt about it, man. He's not. I mean, it's yes. If
can't
we play,
even sniff the floor.
If we
in
play
playoffs.
Golden State and Sacramento, you know,
Utah,
and Utah for
San Antonio.
Those are the only three games. You know, only three teams we played for 82 games. Yeah, man. Love Roddy MVP. You know, heavy minutes, whatever.
Rookie year, 51% from the field, 41% from three. Second year, 42% from the field, 30% from three. Third year, 42% from the field, 28% from three. First year, where are we at? Where are we at? Where are we at? Where are we at? First year, well, everything else is pretty flat. Sorry, I was going to just beat it down into him even worse. But he's on the wrong direction and
trending down.
The fact that the Mavs desperately needed – what was he the best at? Putting the ball in the basket. Changing the pace of the game, putting the ball in the basket. And when they needed that the most, he couldn't sniff the floor. His playoff stats this year, he played 12 minutes. He was 0 for 2 from the field, 2 assists, 1 rebound, 1 turnover, 1 foul. That's basically an Odom challenge in the playoffs.
Go to his stats during that first or second game against Oklahoma City. I kind of think that's where we realized that he wasn't ready for the big
and
boys.
The regular season?
Yeah. I want to say it's...
Yeah, you're right. Mark talked about that last time we had him on. I'm pulling it up right now.
I want to say Jeopardy theme. That was the... that's the writing on the wall. Where
he went 3 for 13, 9 points,
and he had
32
some,
minutes.
3 for 13, 1 of 3 for 3 in...
wasn't very effective defensively. I feel like he had some turnovers.
In 32 minutes, four assists, no turnovers, actually, which is a shocker. Four assists, two steals, four rebounds, 9 points, 3 of 13.
And he only played a combined total of 1 minute in the first two games against Oklahoma City this season.
Yeah, that other game was just when they had to, you know.
The kid.
They had no choice.
Kid injury.
Yeah. F, and it's just a shame. I don't fault the front office because he was such a tease that I can't really blame them, but it's time to cut bait. It's time to find somebody. Cap room, second round. I'm sorry. That $2 million and change, $2.29 million he's going to make next year, will you tack that onto some – if you have $7 million in cap space to use after you sign D-Will and Amnesty Haywood, the difference between $7 million and $9.5 million – on another guy is big enough.
Let's do it.
Much, obviously, more than what Roddy's going to give you.
It's a lot. Yeah. That's a big difference at that point.
Oh yeah.
And if you don't retain Kidd, can't you throw $2.5 million at Delonte and keep him around?
Sure.
You can.
Could you use it that way?
You can, and you could You know, you don't. Delonte's not going to make enough that you're going to use your bird rights on him anyway. But unless you wanted to use the, don't want to waste the exception. So he doesn't make enough that you're probably not going to renounce him. Just all depends. I mean, but yeah.
But yeah, all we'll the formula is punting Roddy.
Yeah.
I gave him a C-.
Man.
He just.
Here when I thought you were a hard-ass grader, all of a sudden, Roddy.
C-, that's hard. That's a rough grade. He showed some.
Are there D's on your scale?
I think that was a soft grade.
I would give Odom a solid D.
You wouldn't give Odom an F?
Yeah, I would.
come on.
It just seemed like he showed some promise in that tail end.
Boy, he did. And when he came back from after his dad died.
All credit in the world to that, man. I don't want to take anything away from that.
I was so impressed. He played good ball. And I thought, man, this kid's growing up. And it ain't happening.
He handled himself the complete opposite that Lamar Odom handled himself. And all credit for that, Roddy.
And maybe it's a situation where him and Rick – and if him and Rick aren't going to mesh, then I side with Rick 100 times out of 100.
There we go.
I side with Rick. And and no detriment to Roddy. If it just isn't going to work, go somewhere else.
Pat him on the ass, wish him well, and we'll give see you.
Give him some baguettes.
All right, keep going. We can make it quick.
Ye.
Incomplete.
Yeah, dude. Or S, satisfactory.
Yeah, satisfactory. Yeah.
Pass/fail. Dominic Jones.
F. Wasted draft pick. Wasted $3 million to buy into the first round. Complete and total whiff by the front office. And when they knew that a CBA was coming, and they knew that first round picks were going to be valuable, they made that decision and wanted this guy, and he is a total spare part. And they obviously – look, it happens to everybody. Nobody bats 1,000. This one, they whiffed on. And it is just anything they can do to shed themselves of him, he's a waste. They're better off picking up, you know, the rights to Vernon Maxwell. And just – and I mean, he can't do anything.
I'd give him an F. Azubuki.
Incomplete.
Yeah.
Can't wait for summer.
N.A.
Brian Cardinal. Feel bad for him.
I feel bad for him. His job is to knock down open shots.
It just
disappeared. He's done it all year, and he couldn't do it. So I have to give him.
I feel like he played 5 total minutes.
I have to give him a D.
I have to give him a D as well. It's just disappointing though, because his shot just
last year he was right on the money.
It totally failed him.
Custodian was there for the hard fouls when we need him to. So for that, he gets the C minus. No D's in my class.
Yamahimi. I'm giving him a B minus.
Yeah, I was gonna say that too. He started off the year on like gangbusters. You know, he lulled there for a while.
You think he got scared because Wright started to climb past him?
Surely not. If that's the case, then that's a detriment. He should be a bigger boy than that. I just think he's still a baby in basketball terms.
He's a baby,
and
him too, man.
The problems with foul trouble bother me because he gets a lot of cheapies. He shouldn't be getting cheapies. He's been playing long enough now. I think next year, if the Mavs retain him, if they don't retain him, then, you know, like Mark said, he's proven he can do you just fine as a backup five, especially if you've got a Brandon Wright who's kind of a stretch five, if you will. So, you know, if the Mavs do retain him next year, it's make or break year for him with Dallas next year, because he's got to take a step.
Yeah, I'm with you, B minus. Too inconsistent, man. I mean, I feel like he took a step forward from where he was, but I feel like he has at least 5 steps, you know, ahead of him.
That's a lot.
Him and Wright need to get together in the gym, man, and just
eat some burgers.
Yes. Eat protein, bang iron, and let's go. You know what I mean? Let's get tough. I'm ready for a tough big 5.
That'd be fun to watch. Jason Terry.
That's tough, man. He came out, he started the season on like gangbusters, man. Had his jet lulls, like, you know, like Jet does.
He had those road woes for the longest time.
Oh man, Jet. That's a tough one.
I'm gonna give him a.
I'm going B.
I was gonna go with a B. I was gonna go with a B.
Yeah.
He was reliable, but at the same time, Jet inconsistent. But that's Jet.
Yep.
You live and die by that quick J, you know. And sometimes we died, but you know, we also won. You know,
he shot the 3-ball better than he had in about 5 years, but his overall efficiency was not so hot. After going up a little bit last year, he shot the ball better last year, and I distinctly remember him shooting the ball better last year. So, you know, yeah, you just have to give him a B. It's a B. Great career here. There's no way somebody's not going to give him more than what the Mavs can offer him. So, you know. We'll be there to give you your standing ovation when you come back, wherever you end up playing. Unless he looks at the roster and says, "Ooh, and I'll play for $2 million," you know, but I don't think he will.
I don't think that'll happen.
CTC.
CTFC. That's what I was starting to say.
Yep.
And then finally Dirk.
It seems almost sacrilegious to give the great Dirk anything but something in the A range, but I have to give him a B+.
That's what I was going to do.
He didn't come into the season ready.
Not entirely his fault, though.
No.
Some of it is,
no,
but some of
it's all his fault. It's his fault, and every other guy, Kid, Odom, although Odom had other issues, Kid, anybody else who came into the season not in shape, it's their fault. They're professional athletes. They have the resources and the wherewithal and knowledge to be able to train and stay ready, and they had to know that the season was going to start at some point, most likely, and when it did, it would start abruptly. And when that happened, they would have an abbreviated training camp and an accelerated schedule, and they needed to be ready. And Rickster is the church of be ready, and they were not ready. And I'm sorry, but despite what all else, that's a half point tick on your letter grade for me. You've got to be ready. You're a professional athlete.
I went A-. I can't ever take Dirk out of the A.
You can't quit him.
What went from the A to the A minus was what Ryland was alluding to, but then I remember the shot that he had against Orlando.
That was a good shot.
And I don't want like one shot to define the grade, but he's just too important to the Mavs. He was very big in a lot of big games for the Mavs. Yes! And there are two people that I will take a human life for in this world, and one is Ron Washington, the other being Dirk Nowitzki, and I just can never, ever not give Dirk an A.
That'd be rough if you
in
took
some
a
range
life,
of an A.
I'll take a life.
I said I would. I didn't say
you
I
are
would.
Going to.
Exactly.
You never know how booty holes is going to act.
That is my leader, but Dirk is my man. Is
I
my
agree.
Man.
I can't fault him. I can't fault him a ton. I know he was full on championship meat in his belly, as were all the guys, but Sean Marion came in shape.
Yeah, no, I'm agreeing with you, man. The anus was on him to be ready to go.
Really?
Yeah.
The anus was?
Yeah. That's why he was out of shape.
Wow.
He was so uncomfortable.
That's awkward.
Very awkward.
Yeah, that's
but it won't. I promise you, he's even already said it. It won't happen this
it
year.
It won't happen again.
Yeah.
It's going to help that.
And if they had a training camp, I think he may be, I mean.
Yeah. No,
are we having that conversation about Dirk?
On his exit interview, he said that basically exact same thing, which is that, you know, in addition to he'll tweak his prep this summer because he's getting older and things are changing, and he and Holger will go back to the lab. They do that every year to some degree, but he said if I have 4 weeks of camp, I'm gonna be able to know how to get my body ready like I normally do. I just you know, you were the best player in the world in June, and you've got to do something to make – but it's like they all knew. See, here's the thing. It's not often discussed. It's discussed to some degree when we talk about the Mavs' overall plans. And obviously Dirk was privy to some portion of that when he signed his latest contract, talked about taking less money, being more flexible in the future, the franchise would be. He had to have some idea that things this year were going to be a little off. I mean, it's Dirk. They're keeping him in the loop. In as much as they can and as much as they're allowed to without filling his head with a bunch of details that are just going to distract him or that he doesn't care about because his job is to focus on the court, he knows. So I guess after winning the title and having that in the back of your mind, it's only human to just ease up off the gas a little bit. You've had the pedal to the metal basically since you were 12. So, you know, I guess that's what you can attribute that to.
So are you almost talking yourself out of your own argument?
No, still B+. Okay.
So, yeah, that's pretty much all the grades. We all.
Where'd you go? I didn't hear your take.
I went with B+.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
It's unfortunate for him that I have to give him B+, but doesn't change the fact that he can just point to the trophy or point to his ring.
Yep, doesn't pretty matter. Much.
So, yeah, that wraps it up for episode 59,
and episode 60 will be happening TBD. It's going to be a big summer for the Mavericks. Everybody knows this. As we discussed earlier in the show with Mark Followell, the Mavericks have a first-round pick that they are more likely to keep than maybe they have since 04?
Real quick.
Or 03, because 04 they traded for Harris. They didn't have that pick going
correct. In. Correct.
Since we're going to be on dry dock for a bit, real quick, are we, will we, will the Mavericks sign Deron Williams this offseason as a free agent for the Dallas Mavericks to play in a game that played on a court?
That's played on a court.
In a game.
And you have to pick.
You know, you knew what I was. You damn
have to
it.
Pick. You have knew. To pick.
I think they will.
I think they will too.
The home dude came out after the Mavs got bounced.
The day after,
came out the next morning on his way to church in the city. Takes a picture of himself walking to church wearing his Josh Hamilton jersey.
It's a done deal, boys.
You have to. What I said with the Dwight Howard stuff, I don't care what is said between now until the actual day it's time to sign. I'm not taking anything into account until it gets to that
day. Yeah, I agree.
The opinion's going to change way too many times.
Yeah.
And then at that point, if it doesn't work, Goran Dragic.
Hey, I like Dragic, but that's going to suck.
Yeah. The shift will have to dramatically change to what you do in the offseason.
Okay, so if... Well, we can, next show.
TBD.
Next show.
TBD.
TBD. Probably, Brian and I were talking before the show, probably somewhere between the draft and the actual time when free agents can sign. The draft is June 28th. Free agent signing period begins, we believe, on July 8th.
Yeah.
So there's a week in there where all the draft transactions will have happened. Teams will be allowed to talk to players, but nobody can sign. So that's probably going to be super ripe for talking about all the possibilities, and then I'm sure we'll follow that up once we have some picture of how things look sometime in the next month or whatever.
And I would think they would have to – I would think Darren would make his decision
pretty quick.
Early in that period.
He I think he will.
He wouldn't wait until the end of the moratorium.
Yep. And I just can't see the man playing for Avery Johnson.
He already has. You mean play some more.
Suffer more.
That too. So, yeah.
By choice.
So we will be back late June, maybe early July-ish.
How can they find out when our next show is going to be, Rylan?
Rylan, yeah, you got
to
answer.
What's the best way for them to figure that out?
It really doesn't matter at this point.
No, it doesn't?
No, it actually matters significantly. You can find our show via the magic and wonder of Google. Mavericks Outsider Report. Just Google it. It's going to take you to where you need to go. There's two avenues. One is iTunes. iTunes is easy. It's quick. It's automatic. And most importantly, it's free.
This is one of my favorite songs.
You don't have
from
to pay.
Album. I like
the that negotiation song. Limerick file.
You
don't have to pay. iTunes.
That's free.
It's free. You go. You search Mavericks Outsider Report. You hit subscribe. It's going to be delivered automatically to your device of choice: your computer, your iPod, your iPad, your iPhone, your iBoogie, whatever you have. It's going to come straight there, and you'll be able to find us and listen at your leisure. The other opportunity is to go to podomatic.com. At podomatic.com, you can also search Mavericks Outsider Report, and there you'll be able to listen to some of our old shows or listen through your browser just whenever you want on the most current show. And you can subscribe via RSS there if you like to do it manually and don't use iTunes. The option is there for you. Perhaps most importantly, we want you to interact with us, because what are we without listeners?
I'm nothing.
Nothing. Nothing.
I'm reduced to nothing without listeners.
So interact with
followers.
Us on Twitter. First and foremost, you want to find Ballin' with Brian.
Repeat that. First and foremost.
First and foremost, statesman and noted author, Ballin' with Brian, B-R-Y-A-N. This gentleman will have you covered on all things Mavericks. He has great access to the team. He's writing stuff for Mavs.com, MavsFastBreak.com, and BallinWithBrian.com, his new platform for everything. He's just into this.
He's jamming right now. He's the hardest
song.
Working man in show business, too. So find him.
No, I'm not.
At him.
He's got you covered.
Tweet him.
Follow him on Twitter. I'm promising you that the upcoming weeks and couple of months are going to be huge for Dallas in terms of movement and players and draft and free agency, and you want to be on top of things. You want to be dialed in. You want to be pointing at the man, Ballin' with Brian.
Do you answer all the questions that are proposed to you on Twitter? Or are you like Newberg, who like responds to like one out of every 37?
No, I'd say my answer ratio is probably like around 95%.
Nice. Follow this gentleman.
Followell's like 102%.
Newberg never responds
never.
To me.
Never.
And I'll throw him some good bones,
me
too.
Me too, man. I do. I throw him lots of bones. No. Nada. But then he'll respond to the most
asinine,
peon.
The
just
most,
peon.
Just the most asinine.
Yes.
And I kind of want to be like, dude, do you know who follows me? Really? Yeah. Like, do you know whose ear I have on the tweeter? Really?
Anyhow.
Come on, man.
So that's props to you, man, for answering. That's what Twitter. That's what the platform's for, you know?
I'm sorry.
For interaction. You can also interact with Tim, T.A. Koger, K-O-G-E-R.
Sorry, I unfollowed you, bro. That was an accident.
That's cool. I thought I was your wild card, your homeboy.
You are my homeboy. That was an accident.
Yeah. So follow Brian's lead and follow Tim on Twitter. He'll give you some sports HSOs. It's time for bases. Baseball
season. They're
coming,
man. They've been letting them loose. I'm ready.
And he will not disappoint you at all.
See ya.
Who else we got? Me. Where do you
find
me?
The one and only. Witticisms, man. Rylan Rowe. R-H-Y-L-A-N-R-O-W-E. All one word. No underscore. That's Rylan Rowe.
Such a silly time when you had that underscore.
It was. It was an unfortunate era in my life, but it's over. And I encourage you to follow me on Twitter and holler at me. I'll talk.
You
about
respond
damn
too.
Anything.
You respond, right? Yeah. Are you 100% response?
Pretty close. Nice. I try to be. I mean, I'm sure I've missed one or two over the years, but I try to pretty much respond to everybody, even if it's just a simple "ha ha."
You boys
or
have
whatever.
Legions more followers than I. So
he, no. Brian has legions more. Whoa! Than we.
Wow!
Do.
What was that? Did you just hawk
I'm
a frog?
Only, I'm only just now up to 214 or 15. Brian's at like 5,000 or something.
Whoa.
3,000?
Dude.
2,000?
I can't even comprehend that number.
I'm looking it up.
You just blown my mind. I think you've just won the internet with that.
I did not win the internet. That's definitely not the case. So like we said, we're going to be back. TBD. I'm stalling.
4,089 followers.
There's a lot of weird people that follow me, I guess.
Do you have a lot of trolls?
Yeah.
Isn't that the guy that either does or did?
Dude, I almost tweeted you that the other day, but I couldn't remember it like exactly. Like whenever you refollowed me, I was like, "Who are you? Aren't you that guy that did that or does that blog for Mavs.com?"
Oh, good
Damn
drop.
It.
Good drop.
That's genius.
Good stuff.
This is from BG at Brian Goody.
Oh. That's not you.
No, it's not.
There is a guy named Brian Gutierrez, but it's got to be a different guy.
Yeah, it's not him. Got to be a different guy.
Yeah, so please follow us on Twitter. We'll appreciate it. We'll interact. We'll have a good time. Fun and yucks and basketball talking.
Thanks to you boys for bringing me onto the team. Let me ride with you this season.
Yeah.
Can't wait to do it next year.
That's right.
Let's go.
Let's do another one.
So we will see you very soon. Stay tuned to Twitter. And if you subscribe, the episode will bite you in the butt whenever it comes down. But, you know, you can stay tuned to Twitter and hear when we have it. I'm guessing it's going to be that first week in July, somewhere in between
the
draft and free agency opening. We'll see you then.
Shut it down! Let's go home!
And that is a wrap.
Woo! Take that windshield!
I don't know about you guys, but I like to watch a guy get his ass whooped.
Two f***ing questions for you. Tell me about the Texas A&M football program, and tell me what the f*** you think about Mitch motherfucking Moreland. You a f***ing Lone Star Ball, get your ass over here to this motherfucking tailgate, and you tell me how you don't want motherfucking Mitch Moreland in this damn lineup, damn it. You hear me? You want to run your motherfucking mouth on Twitter, get your ass over here to this damn tailgate and tell me what's up. See ya.
Tweet me.